They're my niece and nephew or cousin or something. But they're about 4 years old, and she was friends with these two girls named Michelle. And one of them was fat and one of them was skinny. So I used to decipher them by, you know, saying fat Michelle or skinny Michelle. Well, one day, one of the Michelles came to the door. Needless to say, it was the big one, and kids with the memories they have.
Yeah.
Answers the door. My fat Michelle's here!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast on the Riff.
101.1.
Riff. Rocks.
Now is the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff Rock and Roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff Rock and Roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
Isn't it fun?
101. W-R-I-F. Rocks. This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
With all the celebs in town for the Ryder Cup, we just started dialing in. What do you know? We had legendary Bears running back Gale Sayers on the phone, much to Drew's delight.
Who is the greatest running back of all time in your mind?
There's no greatest running back. You have 10 people that are great football players. You know, you can always look at Jim Brown. You can look at O.J. Simpson. You can look at Walter Payton. You look at Barry Sanders. You look at Eric Dickerson. You know, Earl Campbell. You know, a lot of great running backs.
In love making, pro-choice and gay wedding, widespread digging, hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail. Conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American man.
All right, hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. Peter Werby here with you. I don't know who that is. Mike McIntyre, one of my buddies from Toledo, who does mornings down there, gave that to me. And gave me a whole CD with all sorts of songs like that, and without a song list. So, and for those of you getting offended, get over it. It was a parody on one hand, but it's kind of a decent way of looking at how we're characterizing one another, right? The big news around here, welcome, by the way, not only our listening audience on the air at WRIF 101.1 in Detroit, but also people listening nationally and internationally on the internet as well. So you're probably thinking that I'm going to be talking about the issues facing us, the Bush visit to Chile and the protests there, the continuing mess in Iraq, the destruction of Fallujah, and hey, that didn't work out too well for, did it? Now it just has, as so many people predicted, just triggered more unrest, more of an uprising, and more of a quagmire. What the hell is going to happen there? No, it's not about that at all. It's about a basketball game that happened here in Detroit, Michigan, and it was a hell of a game, wasn't it? What it was the Indianapolis Pacers against the Detroit Pistons, and this happened out at a place in Detroit we call the Palace of Auburn Hills, and Detroit was playing Indianapolis, where everything, I don't even know if I can begin to tell it. A lot of this was national news, is on the front page of the New York Times. But there was this huge brawl. Ron Artest from the Indianapolis Pacers got in a brawl with one of the Pistons, and a little shoving match there, Ben Wallace from the Pistons. And I don't even know if I want to go on with describing it all, but it was one hell of a brawl. Ron Artest, and who was the other guy? Steven Jackson, Jermaine O'Neal, waded into the crowd and started slugging people. People were fighting on the floor of the where the games played. They were as the Pacers left the arena. People were pelting them with beer and chairs and everything under the sun. Number of people went to the hospital, and here's what happened. Ron Artest was suspended for the rest of the season, and that means he's going to lose two of his Indiana Pacers teammates must miss a total of 55 games for fighting with fans during a melee that broke out at the end of a game against Detroit Pistons. If you're wondering, I mean, if you're thinking, wait a minute, let's talk about the important things of the world. Stay with me. This will all connect up. Overall, the NBA issued some of the harshest penalties in its history by banning 9 players for more than 140 games. Artest suspension is the strongest ever levied for a fight during a game. Indiana's Jackson suspended for 30 games. Jermaine O'Neal, 25. Detroit's Ben Wallace, whose shove of Artest after a foul led to a 5-minute fracas. Artest, doesn't he want to do his rap record anyways? So he can go do that, right? Even the Pistons coach, Larry Brown, said, "I'm sick about this for Indiana, and we've lost our heart and soul." People were extraordinarily disturbed that this occurred. I mean, this was the official pronouncement. Everybody connected with the game, the officials, the club owners, the coaches, other players, is saying this is just awful, among other things, that it makes Detroit look so terrible. Players Union Director Billy Hunter called the penalties excessive and said an appeal would be filed on Monday. All of the suspensions are without pay. Artest will lose approximately $5 million in salaries, while O'Neal's suspension will cost him nearly 25% of his $14.8 million salary for the current season. Let's see here. Joe from Brighton says, "I was wondering what your take on the fight that is that broke out during the basketball game and what this says about how aggressive and angry people have become over a single game of basketball. People have gotten too obsessed about games, and now it's come down to my team better than your team kind of thing. Other than that, I love the show and keep on keeping on." Excuse me while I move the microphone. Like that. I don't know. I mean, haven't people always been pretty passionate about their teams? One of the things that occurred to me, though, was, I didn't find it so offensive. It was sort of millionaires fighting millionaires-to-be. Just think, everybody that got punched by Artest or O'Neal or one of those people, they're going to wind up with a hell of a pocket full of change, aren't they? Because they're all going to sue. I mean, these big, huge 7-foot, 6-inch guys smacking people, smacking the wrong guy and all of this, and punching people in the face and all that. Whoa! So, I don't know. Millionaires. What bothers me, of course, is when working people fight working people, like in Iraq. The working people of this country fighting the working people of Iraq for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Now, let me see what else do I have in here. Yeah, it was going on everywhere. Bush was in Santiago, Chile. He stepped into the middle of a confrontation because the Chilean security people wouldn't let his bodyguards, the lead Secret Service agent, into this dinner, right? So he just kind of pulled him in. There was a big tussle there. I mean, what's happening in the world? Mark Pazman, another friend of mine, the Pazman, great blues player in our city, he said, people in this country are just so damn angry. Just so damn angry. And he said he's angry. And I've got this bit of anger in me that try to suppress, try to use my Tai Chi and be very cool and all that. But I just can feel it bubbling up. And everybody's accusing everybody. I was actually struck by this, I don't know, it's not that many. I mean, I get hundreds of emails, but mostly for people that appreciate the show and that want to contribute something, let me know about something, give me graphics. I mean, I couldn't do my website. That's peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. Someone ribs me all the time, say, "You think you say your website enough?" Well, you know, I'm not selling anything there. The reason I want you to go to my website is because it's where I learned everything. I mean, I put the stuff on there. I mean, I read something and go, whoa, this is very good information. So I put it there. Or I link in what I think are important organizations or, you know, musicians or whatever. And it's labyrinthine, right? It's a labyrinth. And I'm going to be gone all next week, so it's not going to change after tomorrow night. But, man, you could spend the rest of your life there if going through all of the different links to the different sites and what have you. But I keep getting these emails from these right-wingers that keep talking about, they use the same phrase, hate-filled website. Hate-filled website. You talk about tolerance, but your website is just hate-filled. So when you keep getting the same phrase over and over again, the first thing that occurs to me is this is one of these campaigns launched by the right wing. That they're, I don't know what they think. Oh, boy. You think it's hateful? Well, I better change it all and say I love President Bush because I'm so tolerant. Boy, it's the first time I ever called him president. Well, he actually did get elected this time. I know some of you, and even says on my website, he stole the election again. But for all practical purposes, he has won the election. You don't think so? Give me a call. 313-298-WRIF. Email calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Now, as I was saying, so I thought there was this campaign of these nasty, mean-spirited right-wingers. They got nothing else to do with their time other than, you know, harass people. So it's their hobby. And it's, yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I think I've told you that before. People write in and say the meanest things, or they try. They think, I'm going to say the meanest thing about everything from the way I look. And, you know, I go, oh, well, you've hurt me so badly. Of course, you know, you're the ones used to that when you're in the public eye. Or the old thing about consider the source. But then I came to the conclusion that it really isn't a campaign. It's not like these one of these little organizations, because these organizations of these yapping conservatives, even though they dominate every institution in our country now, they're still a small minority. Although there's a lot of anger in the country, these people are pure anger, pure rage. That's all that motivates them. I think most of the people on the left, although it's not exclusively true, I have to say that, are generally motivated by feelings of love and sharing, cooperation, tolerance, generosity, you know, stuff like that. Those are the qualities that one associates with the left. Me, the right, mean-spiritedness, intolerance, anger, racism, you know, well, I suppose it's intolerance and all that. Anyways, but I then realized, because I start listening to these right-wing talk shows, and really, people say to me, how can you listen to these guys? I mean, some of you do. You sit there and listen to these people. I don't want to give them any more publicity, say their names. I listen to them for 3 or 4 minutes, and I think I've said this before. Usually, it's not every sentence or every thought. It's every clause that they utter is either a lie, just flat-out lie, dis or misinformation, or based on a faulty premise. So I go nuts. I hear one of these guys, and they start opening, and they say, and I go, no, that's not true. And I go, wait, that's not true either. What, you came to a conclusion that was based on, and they're just on. So I go, I can't stand this. But this is, they must get together. Maybe they have a club or something like that, where what they've decided is, it's the liberals and the left that are the mean people, the bigoted people, the intolerant people. In psychology, this is called projection. You project onto others your own negative qualities. And this incredible thing occurred the other day when there was this cartoon by Oliphant. And Oliphant is this old line cartoonist. I don't even know if they print them here in Detroit. I don't think so. And he had it was a comment on George Bush appointing Condoleezza Rice as Secretary of State. And, I mean, here is a woman with one failure after the next, 9/11. She was the one that assured everybody that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, that, remember, it was her thing, that the smoking gun could turn out to be a mushroom cloud. I was thinking, that kind of made me hungry, a mushroom cloud. And so most of these people involved in the run-up to the Iraq War, you think would be cashiered out of the Bush administration, but rather because it's not competence. It's like any mob. It's like any gang. It's not competence, or it's not goal completion or anything like that. With Bush, it's loyalty. Anyone who's disloyal, that is, anybody who disagrees with the bandit chieftain, they're out of there, right? All right, so I'm listening to the, and here's an area over in a state that overwhelmingly went for John Kerry, particularly in our region right around here, our broadcast area. But there's just one right-wing talk show host after the next, from 9 a.m. till like midnight or something like that. Each one of them saying the same thing about these attacks on Condoleezza Rice, they're racist, and here is, I can mention this guy because he's so big, Rush Limbaugh. Isn't this guy ever going to go to jail for breaking the drug laws? Remember, he's the one that said that people that violate the drug laws ought to, boom, be put right in jail. Anyways, he says, where is something? Oh, yeah. Listen to Rush describe the grotesque, bigoted cartoons attacking, and then for some reason or other, in capital letters, Dr. Condoleezza Rice. I mean, here is an imperial effort to secure oil, control of oil in the Middle East, setting up a puppet state, wasting the lives of U.S. and Iraqis. And Condoleezza Rice is so deep in bed with the oil company, she had an oil tanker named after her. Anyway, so here's the cartoon. They show a big Bush holding a little bird. And Bush is saying, how would ums like to be Secretary of State? And this is hard. It's really small. And she's this little bird, and she says, ark, ark. Okay, anything you say, Chief. You bet, Chief. You're my hero, Chief. And each one is done in a caricature, accentuating the physical characteristics of each. And I don't know how these morons on the right could say that this is like a racist caricature. I mean, it's not like some funky old Black Sambo thing or anything like that. So now, and this is like the 3 or 4 minutes I heard of each one, the liberals are racist. The George Bush has done more to promote racial tolerance and equality. Turning everything, absolutely everything on its head. I mean, ultimately, race is cultural. I mean, what difference does color of skin mean? I mean, this is how cynical the Bushes are. They appoint a less than qualified judge with an unspectacular record to be the justice of the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas. And they say, oh, look, we've appointed a black man to the Supreme Court. Well, what he is, it's what the right wing thinks of as a good Negro. And the same, it's not even, and I'm not saying that that's the way Thomas or Condoleezza Rice operates. Yeah, they're their own people. They got their own twisted little right wing deal that is no different than the Euro Americans. So what difference is Condoleezza Rice or Clarence Thomas any different than the rest of these right wing creatures that inhabit Planet Bush? Planet Bush is out past Uranus, right? Nothing except for some skin hue. And what ultimately does that mean? It means absolutely nothing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, that race is cultural. There are a number of musicians that historically, who are white, but what they say have lived black. They're white, but they have lived black. There's even a guy in Detroit I know whose name I won't even bother to say. If I said it, you knew who he was, you'd think, wait a minute, he's a black guy. But he's not. His skin is white, but he's developed a lot of the cultural cues that are, I'm not even going to name. None of them are negative. None of them are negative. They're very subtle social cues that he lives black and lives within the African-American culture. And people have used the N-word on him. He told me this, right? This is, and his skin is, quote, I don't know, not exactly white. What shade am I? Kind of pinkish or something like that? A pink American. I'm a pink American. I'm a pinko American, you'd say, before you jump to that conclusion. So so it means, how do you function in a given society? That's all I mean. Right, one more thing about hate, and then we'll get on to some other stuff. Here is either from Eddie or Shannon, from both of them. It says, my brother listens to you every Sunday night in the Detroit area. He made a couple of tapes of you for me, and I must say you can be entertaining, but mostly outrageous. Well, that's all right. Then goes on just denouncing me of all these things. See, this is what's so dreadful. Everything that he or she says in here is like slightly wrong about me and what I said. My brother listens to you because you hate George Bush, which probably is not the case. That's not why I'm sure that because I hate George Bush. I find all those people on one level personally repulsive, to tell you the truth. But that's irrelevant. What's relevant are there social policies that are screwing up this country, screwing up the world, creating the deaths of now hundreds of thousands of people. Now, but get this. This is the kind of arrogance and self-righteousness. You grab vulnerable, uninformed people with the popular George Bush is evil and caused everything that is wrong rhetoric. So any of you that have similar views to mine, you're vulnerable and uninformed, according to these people. And, I mean, if I read you this long email, you'd go, this person says that we're uninformed. Where is somewhere in here? This is brother law. Oh, yeah. My brother listens to you because you hate George Bush. Since he was unemployed after 9/11, he too now hates George Bush. Boy, I'll bet you, brother, if you're listening to this, you think it's a lot more complex than that. Anyway, I'm sort of rambling. If you have a comment, let me know. 313-298-WRIF. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Where was my other little? Oh, yeah. This is the 41st anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We'll have a program on an interview I did with an author of a new book about the Kennedy assassination, 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time tonight. And here's what I'm wondering from you. I take it for granted that there was some sort of conspiracy involved in this. One thing, you have to have been born like 1950 or before for this to even resonate. If anything beyond that, if you're born in 1960, obviously you were 3 years old when that occurred, so it's all ancient history. But I wonder, tell me, if you will, in high school or college, what's the prevailing theory there? What's the history? Was Lee Harvey Oswald the lone assassin? Because here, a new video game to be released tomorrow allows players to simulate the assassination of U.S. President John F. Kennedy. It's called JFK Reloaded. And David Smith, a spokesman for the Kennedy family, is despicable, said he wouldn't say any more. Kurt Ewing, managing director of a Scottish firm, Traffic Games, developed it, and he says that we believe that the only thing we are exploiting is new technology. He says we believe passionately that there was no conspiracy. Well, the reason he believes passionately there was no conspiracy is because this whole thing is set up for a player to fire 3 shots at Kennedy's motorcade from this recreated 6th-floor perch in the Texas School Book Depository. If you had a whole complex thing of conspiracy, whether it was the mob or the CIA or Cuban anti-Castro Cubans or whatever, the game wouldn't work well. But I'm interested in that. I used to do shows saying, dedicate the show to John F. Kennedy. Will his assassins ever be brought to justice? Well, all right, let's take some of your calls. 313-298-WRIF. Let me see here if I can get one. Oh, man. We're getting new studios, folks, and we won't be clunking around like this. Come on. Give me my mouse here. Let's see, because we had... Oh, yeah. This... Eleni is listening in Colorado. Send me, I want to make sure that we're streaming. So actually just our webmasters, or I guess either one of you, the webmaster at radiopower.org or whiterosesociety.org. First one streams this show along with WRIF.com. Second one archives it. Let me know if we're streaming out there for you. Anyways, Eleni in Colorado wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And here is an article from the Tallahassee, Florida Democrat. And it's a 56-year-old Vietnam veteran has been called up to serve in Iraq. We are that stretched out, dear friends. All right, let's go to our phones. Rof Dizzy, that's R-O-F, is that how you spell it? Yeah, okay. Rof Dizzy is our producer and phone screener for this section of the program. Jay Hudson will be back in a little while. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I think the election could have been manipulated by Diebold and the four other companies that manufactured the voting machines with no paper trail. In Ohio, where Democratic districts were reporting a 70% win for Kerry on exit polls, the machines were registering a 70% win for Bush, and I think there needs to be an investigation, and you know, I think that until we get rid of these paperless, no paper trail machines, that we're not going to have another free election, another guaranteed election where every vote counts, so to speak, quote unquote.
Well, let me say this. I think there's good evidence to say that many of the polls were rigged, maybe enough to give the election to Kerry. But there was also a purposeful suppression of the vote in many of the urban areas in Ohio. People wound up in many cases were required to stand in line for 8 hours. Hundreds and hundreds of people in those districts went home because there was a rain that day. I was going to say driving. I don't know what. There was a rain. So. And there is a great feeling, at least I saw some polls, half the electorate does not think that all the votes will be counted and counted fairly. So this, in we're supposed to be the world's greatest democracy. You don't get figures like this in the other Western democracy. You go to Canada or England or Sweden or France or Italy or something like that, and you say, well, I don't know about Italy, but you say, do you think the ballots will be counted fairly? You get, you know, like 90% of the population says yes, or Australia or New Zealand, places like that. Yeah, of course. What do you mean? Why wouldn't they be? But here, the whole electoral system is under suspicion, and which is going to turn more and more people away from it. I think the Republicans like that. The less people that vote, the better that they do. But it ultimately erodes electoral democracy. What will people turn to then? Well, there's other ways to make changes in society. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. It's Dave from Royal Oak.
How are you? Hi, Dave. Good.
I just read a disturbing article on the Internet that, if true, means sort of a nightmarish escalation of the war in Iraq on both sides.
What now?
The use of chemical weapons on both fronts.
I haven't heard a thing about that. What did you see?
I saw that 270 Americans were killed Sunday morning, so it would have been probably last night around midnight, in a chemical attack on the Al-Bakar base in Bakal. No.
Wait. You're saying there was an attack in which 270 Americans died?
No, I've only found it on one website, and it's a questionable website to begin with.
Well,
yeah.
I would suspect that is, I'm not, I mean, I would say without even knowing any more, since there is all these embedded reporters that, I mean, there's been a lot of reporters not being able to stray out of Baghdad, but I'll tell you right here, that's not true. There are
some. That would be good if it wasn't true.
Well, I
would feel better.
Yeah, well, you can go to sleep at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., after the show's done, knowing that that's not the case. And if that did happen, something like the Beirut barracks in 1982, that the one of the worst presidents that the United States ever had, Ronald Reagan, presided over, we'd sure know about it. We'd sure know about it.
Yeah, we'd have to, wouldn't we?
Yeah. All right, thank you very much, but I'll keep looking for that. And our next, let me see those line three. All right, we're still holding up our fingers, folks. What are we? Jay Hudson's on the job now, screening your calls. We're talking about the end of December. We're going to get into the new building. All right. God, will we be modern? Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. It's Peter Werby.
Hello, this is Joe from Livonia.
Hi, Joe.
When I first turned you on, you were talking about everything that had happened in the palace Friday night.
Right.
Just my view basically on that is really no matter what the fans were wrong in essence, but no matter what happens with the fans in a professional sporting event, the number one rule when you are a professional athlete is do not go into the stands for no reason. No reason.
Yeah.
I don't care if somebody somebody does the worst thing to you. There's no reason for you to go into the stands, and that's why I think the three Indiana players that went into the stands deserve what they get, and Indiana's season is pretty much lost now.
Well, they won last night or tonight. I forgot which.
Right, but in the long run, not having our test, Jermaine O'Neal and Jackson, which are, I do believe, they're three starting forwards, not there for, a combination of 25 games until they get one of them back.
Yeah,
it's going to hurt them in the long run.
Well, I think you're right, and I think like so many sports, think about hockey. A lot of the violence kind of has ebbed and flowed. In fact, at one point, it was beginning to look like Rollerball, if you remember that movie. And I think the owners thought, well, hey, this is a hell of a draw. I mean, probably anybody who's been in a sports bar has seen these videos that they play there that are hockey fight films. And there's no hockey. I mean, in fact, the late Rodney Dangerfield said, I can't do an imitation of his voice, but he said, I was at a fight the other night and some hockey broke out. All right, thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate your call. Jay, what's our next line? All right, thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing? I thought the producer would give you the question I asked.
What's that? No.
You were complaining about the U.S. government policy in Iraq and blah, blah, blah. I know what's done is done. How would you get out of it?
Well, you know, here's one of the things. That's a good question. And I wish that we would get a clue from the Bush administration how they plan to do it. Sometimes mistakes are so deep-rooted. Some of us, you can only imagine this in some personal mistakes we've made. I mean, if we made a little error, we can correct it just by turning around and doing the right thing. If we've been doing the wrong thing for an extraordinarily long time, and that goes back into the 80s, if not before, when the United States supported Saddam Hussein and arms Saddam Hussein and gave him military intelligence and what have you, and it becomes extraordinarily difficult. I would think that nothing could be worse if the United States abruptly withdrew. Just say, hey, we don't want to lose another 1,200 Americans and another 8,000 Americans severely wounded and another, I forget what it is, another, I think another 10 or 20,000, let's just low figure, another 10,000 that have been drawn out for other medical reasons. And we've already created or caused the death of 100,000 Iraqis, destroying city after city after city. This thing is getting more and more out of control. The very civil war that we were warned against is beginning to take place as Kurds are fighting Sunnis and what have you. So as far as I'm concerned, immediate withdrawal tomorrow. I'm sorry, wait. Start again, please.
Kurds and fighting Sunnis?
Yeah.
That's what's happening right now?
Well, there's
people that are planting bombs in the road with cell phones. That's, you know, like I keep telling my friends at work, I keep fighting with them over this. You know, we go into a country, invade a country, why?
Yeah.
Is it WMDs and they're not there? But this pretty much could all stop if the Iraqi people, some of the Iraqis, the majority of them, I would assume, want freedom. And if they don't want it, then they're going to fight. But the majority of them that they're finding are having huge stockpiles of weapons that, I mean, they, according to the guys I work with, they could be planted. You know what I mean?
You mean they say that there might still be weapons of mass destruction?
No. like, you know, with RPGs, you know, they got 10 of them in their bedroom.
Right.
Firing out a window, but, you know, there's no insurgents there. There's nothing like that. All I'm saying is, if they quit firing on the Americans, then the Americans wouldn't fire back.
Well, you got to ask the question, what are the Americans doing there in the first place? This is an illegal war. The United States had no reason to attack Iraq in the first place, and now it becomes, wait a minute, it just becomes like one of these basketball or football games. We're there, we're in the game, and we don't want to leave the game, except it's not a game. It's not like people getting punched or getting beer and popcorn thrown on them or getting suspended for the rest of the season. It's about life and death. It's about an army stretched so thin that they're calling up 56-year-old Vietnam veterans, and it's about the United States under the command. It's not it's not like the individual soldiers or units are doing these awful things. They're ordered there by the commander-in-chief, who either, depending on how you look at it, either operated under absolutely the worst faulty information that lots of people knew was faulty, including myself and what I said on every one of these broadcasts, or purposely lied in order to justify going in there. And the idea that we're just, you know, there's a phrase, cut your losses. I mean, how many more deaths would you think it would be worth trying to, quote, give freedom to the Iraqi people?
Well, I don't know. My opinion, nobody, like I keep telling these guys I work with, nobody can know if they were there or if they're not. He had tons of warning.
No, but there's no reason to suspect that he ever really had them. They said they knew where they were. Rumsfeld and Powell and Condoleezza Rice and Cheney and Bush, they showed pictures. They say, here's where they are. They're there. Tony Blair, the prime minister of Iraq or of England, said that he has weapons that are able to be launched in 45 minutes. Every bit of that is wrong. Whole thing about they were developing nuclear weapons, all wrong. There's no way he could have hidden them, no way he could have transported them. They weren't there. They ended all their programs 10 years ago or so. And all the weapons inspectors said that. All the weapons inspectors that were going in there found nothing. And say he'd moved them all out. Well, he didn't have any more. Hey, I'm late. Thank you.
Your opinion matters. Call 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call and more of your calls coming up.
Psst. Hey, late night listeners. David Hall reporting for Rock Financial. Rock Financial's giving away $100,000. That's right, it's Rock Financial's Dash for the Cash. Yep, I said it. We're giving away $100,000, and while others are sleeping, you can enter to win right now at rockfinancial.com during any Lions game this season. When the Detroit Lions return the opening kickoff for a touchdown, one lucky fan is going to win up to $100,000 to pay off their mortgage. But you got to register to win. You got to go to rockfinancial.com. That's rockfinancial.com. It's the Dash for the Cash exclusively from the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. And while you're at rockfinancial.com, check out our mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford? Maybe if it makes sense to refinance. Go right now, rockfinancial.com. It's the Dash for the Cash. You could win $100,000 from the mortgage experts. rockfinancial.com.
Visit rockfinancial.com for official rules. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender.
Spice up your Monday night. Join 101 WRIF's own Steve Black this and every Monday night throughout the rest of the 2004 season. Head to McGregor's and catch all the pro games on Sunday and Monday on the most TVs anywhere downriver. Enjoy $1 domestic crafts, $2 domestic bottles, and $3 Johnsonville brats and stadium-style nachos while you watch the game. Every Monday, watch the game with 25-cent wings. And don't forget, this Wednesday, it's the biggest party night of the year. The night before Thanksgiving at McGregor's is a party you don't want to miss. The party starts after work with a DJ and goes till 2 a.m. with live music from Rusty Lunchbox, drink specials, and lots more. It's all happening at McGregor's this Wednesday night. McGregor's at Telegraph Road near West Road in Brownstown Township. Call them for more info at 734-675-3870. Don't forget to join Steve Black from 101 The Riff this Monday night for all the football and club keno action. Enjoy the game and win great Riff prizes this Monday night at McGregor's.
Motor City, Meltdown here, hanging out with the lovely Karen Newman.
Finally.
I told Karen about my favorite car dealer, Joe Panion Chevrolet. Now she goes there, too.
That's right, Meltdown. You know how tough car buying can be, and with my two kids getting bigger, well, we needed something reliable, dependable, and cool.
She took my advice and joined the family, Joe Panion Chevrolet.
Joe Panion Chevrolet is the place to go. They made the whole process easy, and Meltdown, they got me a cool new Chevy Suburban with TVs and a DVD player. Very cool.
Nothing like driving out 696 listening to Barney in the backseat. I keep telling you guys to stop by and see our friend Asher Panion at Joe Panion Chevrolet in Southfield.
Meltdown, that's right. Asher Panion and the whole family at Joe Panion Chevrolet will help you find a new Chevy that fits your lifestyle.
Stop by, ask them about the sweet lock and roll deal, now till November 30th.
Or call them at 866-JOE-1111. That's 866-JOE-1111.
Chevrolet, an American revolution.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world. WRIF.com brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Make your night in the town even better without hitting your wallet. With the Riffs, dine online. You are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. The Riff presents your opportunity to save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants. Like Denny Street Roadhouse, located on West Village Drive in the heart of West Dearborn. Denny Street Roadhouse, featuring great American food and great American music. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. Quantities are limited, so you'd better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101. The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings for Motor City businesses. Like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946, invites you to come into any of their 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with Detroit's rock station at WRIF.com.
The new CD from local artist Jay LeBang, The Writ, is now available. The Writ was recorded right here in Detroit and features 14 new tracks, all written and performed by Jay LeBang, including Don't Waste Your Time, Worship the Sun, and September 15th. Get the new CD, Writ, from Jay LeBang at Slick Disc in Trenton, Rockbox in Southgate, Dearborn Music on Michigan Avenue, Rock of Ages in Garden City, Dearborn Music on Canton Center Road North, Sam Goody in the Southland Mall, and online at cdbaby.com. The new CD from local artist Jay LeBang, Writ, is available now. Find out more online at jaylebang.com.
This is Night Call. This is Night Call. The Riff Phone-In Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
I see it on TV. We get calls on the phone by the prophets of doom. They won't leave us alone. Planet is dying, and there's no time to spare. We spend all our days sowing seeds of despair. We get enough bad news to harden our hearts. This fear that we feed on is what's keeping us apart.
Hey, we're back. Yeah, the fear that's keeping us apart. Again, sorry, Mike McIntyre, if you're listening down in Toledo, give me a call. I don't know who that is. Anybody knows who that is? 313-298-WRIF. Call talk, yes, at yahoo.com. In about 18 minutes, it'll be the 41st anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. 1:30 a.m., I'll have an interview. People have put together a book, including an audio tape of a lot of a lot of the audio of what went on in those 4 days back in 1963. And I was asking some of you, no one's really answered. What do you learn in school, or what do you believe personally, or where do you take this information from about either was Lee Harvey Oswald the lone assassin, or was there a conspiracy? I'm lean towards a conspiracy. So does Ron in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he's got one of these frames from the Zapruder film that was filming Kennedy just as he got hit by this bullet. And bam! And Ron says, good evening, my friend. Here is frame 313 of the Zapruder film. Tell me, Peter, does this damaging shot not appear to be coming from the front? The CIA did this, says Ron. Nobody will ever convince me differently. A lot of Americans feel the same way. There's any number of explanations as to why, in fact, that wasn't a rear shot and all that. I don't know. Talking about the elections, Eric in Ann Arbor writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Regarding your question as to whether Bush got in this time legitimately or not, there are two studies, one from the University of Pennsylvania and the other from the University of California at Berkeley, which provide a good case for allegations of wide-scale voter fraud. These possibilities should be explored further. I agree completely, even if said voter fraud took place without actually tipping the election. You give them an inch, they walk all over you. Well, that's the conservative way. With that said, all measures should be taken to not allow such a thing to ever happen again. Last but certainly not least, your show rocks. Thank you. Yeah, if you go to my website, peterwerbe.com, PeterWerbe.com, there's any number of news articles and studies showing that, in fact, there were great reasons to believe that the election was rigged. All right. Last caller was talking about Iraq. This statement was made in Baghdad. Our armies do not come into your cities and lands as conquerors or enemies, but as liberators. Our armies do not come into your cities and lands as conquerors or enemies, but as liberators. That was said when? Recently? No. That was the British in May 18, 1918, as they went into the former territory of the Turkish provinces. Turkey was aligned with Germany in World War I. As part of the liberation, this is from this is Edwin Black. Edwin Black, what did he write? New York Times best-selling and award-winning author of IBM and the Holocaust. And this comes from a book he... I'll get this guy. Inside Iraq's 7,000-year history of war, profit, and conflicts. And he says, as part of that liberation, the British illegally seized the most valuable oil lands in Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia is Iraq. The Kurdish Mosul region. And this on November 7th, 1918, a full week after the armistice with Turkey. The invasion enabled Britain to cobble three ethnically separate provinces together. Kurdish Mosul, Sunni Baghdad, and Shiite Basra into a single land that London would rename Iraq. The name Iraq came from the ancient Arab cartographic designation. So see, the roots of this, I'm talking about going back into the 70s and the 80s. We're talking here 80 years of the West intervening in this region solely for exploitation. Exploitation particularly of oil. And here's the British, the colonial imperial British, saying our armies do not come into your cities and lands as conquerors or enemies, but as liberators. However, guess what? The Arab people didn't buy it. And according to this article, Arab and Islamic nationalists in the newly invented Iraq did not want to share their land with infidel European Christians. Nor did they choose to share European values of democracy and pluralism, ideals that had never taken root in the Islamic Middle East for 7,000 years. It didn't take long for the Iraqis to rise up in terror raids, burning, bombing, kidnapping, and massacring Westerners, including those sent to commercially develop the land and its waterways. The outraged British response to such horrors was an aerial bombardment to shock and awe the villages, but the Iraqi violence and the British resolve to combat it with troops and tanks persisted, all for the oil wealth of Iraq. Now, this, we're talking, if you're just joining us, this is 1918. Then the British used poison gas on Iraqi tribesmen who are rebelling against them. And if you think about modern weaponry used against this enormous army, the most powerful army in the world back then, I mean, are we getting to see a little distant mirror here, huh? Major John Glubb, the British officer who organized the Arab Legion, complained bitterly in a letter to Whitehall, where the government in England is. We imagine that we had bestowed on the Iraqis all these blessings of democracy. Nothing could be more undemocratic than the result. A handful of politicians obtained possession of the machinery of government, and all the elections were rigged. In this process, they all became very rich. And that's what's going to happen in Iraq with this election being forced upon these people by this illegal occupier, our country, Pushko. Here's what Edwin Black says. America will never succeed in Iraq if we once again naively expect democracy to take root there and flourish. What can possibly occur next week to transform that society has not occurred for 7,000 years. The only way to succeed in Iraq is to survive long enough to intelligently withdraw and then rapidly, at breakneck speed, develop alternative energy sources to detach us from this far-off place where we are not wanted, where we should not be, and upon which our industrialized world is now dependent. We're this helpless giant because we are dependent upon what is underneath Iraq and Saudi Arabia. We're in a region where we are roundly despised, where the goals that we have in mind publicly, you know, the establishment of democracy, was a load of crap. There's not a person in the Bush administration that cares one fig about that. They care about the oil. The only way to succeed in Iraq is to survive long enough to intelligently withdraw and then rapidly, at breakneck speed, develop alternative energy sources to detach us from this far-off place where we are not wanted, where we should not be, and upon which our industrialized world is now dependent. So says Edwin Black. This was in the Chicago Sun-Times, by the way. All right, continuing onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hello, this is Tim from Detroit.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah, what you just talked about is known as Churchill's Folly. Actually, that was kind of his design in terms of, you know, Iraq, in terms of putting the Shia, the Sunni, and the Kurds together.
Right.
And also, as an uninformed listener, according to one of your emailers, George Bush himself said on Fox News that there was no evidence of Hussein being tied in, you know, with al-Qaeda. So this was George Bush that actually said this on Fox News, you know, their own station.
Right. Hey, Tim, who killed Kennedy?
I think it was Tropicana down in New Orleans.
It was what?
I think the mob did it.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that's kind of my view on that.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Hi, it's Riff, and you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. It's Peter Werby with you.
Hey, this is Zach from Birmingham.
Hi, Zach.
Did you see the thing on Canadian TV about, like, this one woman stepped on a Bush doll?
Stepped on a what?
Bush doll, like it was an action figure of George Bush type of thing.
Oh, a Bush doll.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I didn't hear what you said. Yeah, no, what happened?
Well, have you ever seen Canadian TV?
Yeah, sure.
Like, the People from This Hour has 22 Minutes, which, you know, is a political comedy show.
No, I've never seen that. But I've seen some of, for instance, there's a program called the Fifth Estate, which is part of their national news program that has just done these incredible biographies of, like, Dick Cheney, one I saw just recently, that if this is what needed to be seen in the United States, but there's not a channel or a network or a cable in America that would dare to put on anything that hard-hitting and that critical.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you mentioned a Bush doll. There's also Bush dog chewies. You know, these things you give to dogs, they go, you know, they knock them around like that. I'm getting one for my dog.
That's perfect.
Okay. Hey, who killed Kennedy?
I have no idea. I'm almost 14.
Hey, well, just have you ever learned about it or been taught about it?
Not yet.
Okay. Keep an open mind. Thank you very much, Zach. Thanks for calling in. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Do we have open lines? Maybe, yeah. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I was calling to hear your thoughts on Sirius Radio and Howard Stern and the FCC and how successful you think satellite radio will be down the road.
Well, I'll tell you, and although they probably even will hate me for saying that, but most of my bosses, just the very fact that you brought up those, you know, what do you think about so-and-so makes them, you know, go, oh, like that. Because nobody wants competition on our end. I don't know. I hear it both ways. On one hand, comparing it to cable, where people said, who's going to pay for television when you get it free? And now the same thing's being said about radio. I mean, I saw Stern on Letterman. He was, like, begging people to, you know, to pay the $12.95 a month to hear him. So he can say the whole F word, and he can, you know, spank naked lesbians till his heart's content. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of costs involved. They're paying him $500 million. Yeah, I would do it for 10%. Think about it. They'd have to, how much, never mind. Anyway, they're going to pay him $500 million. Their satellites, Sirius satellites, are eroding, so they're going to have to put up a couple new birds at, I don't know, like tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know where all this money's coming from. Their stock went up.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, some of the programming is pretty interesting, but I don't know. Somehow, right now, I'm not into paying $12.95. How about you?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear it.
Well, you got to pay for the instrument to begin with.
You know, it's $100, $150 flat fee, and then $12. You get, you know, all those stations to choose from for your musical taste. I don't know.
Well, there's an old Bruce Springsteen song called 57 Channels, and the line is 57 channels and nothing on. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, who do you think killed Kennedy?
Yeah, that's I don't know that either. Actually, when I was in high school, I remember they did have some conspiracy theory guy come in and talk to us. And I remember it being really quite interesting, but I couldn't tell you that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Again, with the Kennedy conspiracy theories, is the same kind of, same kind of deal. I wish I could get a little more precise word than that, but same kind of deal about the elections. Is there such a deep-rooted suspicion of the people running our lives? You would think if there was a government that we trusted, which in some ways is a joke. I mean, 99.9% of the governments ever existed on Earth couldn't be trusted. I mean, what are they there for? You know, protect the property and wealth and power of the already wealthy and powerful. I mean, that's the function of government. That's how it arose. That's how the political state arose. Some people started grabbing more of the goodies than other people, and since people primarily lived in cooperative communal societies, you had to make up a bunch of junk about why one person or a few people got to rule everybody else and got to take the wealth that everybody produced and take good portions of it for themselves. So the political state began as a racket. And not much has changed.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
Why are men all over America talking about Testosterpro? Listen.
After I tried Testosterpro, I felt like I was the man I wanted to be. I wish I'd found out about it sooner because I feel like I'm more of a man now than when I was younger.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. In many men, testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35. But now there's Testosterpro, the complete performance boosting system I designed for men who are starting to feel their age. If you don't feel like the man you used to be, call now for a 30-day risk-free trial of the Testosterpro system, which includes my bonus report on aging and its effects on energy, sex drive, and stamina, free with your order.
Call now for your confidential trial of Testosterpro. 1-800-897-3124. 1-800-897-3124. Results will vary. 1-800-897-3124. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-897-3124.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
More Night Call with Peter Worby. Next on The Rim.
Attention car buyers, it's the end of the month and the beginning of the holiday season. Two great reasons to have a gigantic sale, and that is exactly what Parkway Chrysler Jeep is doing from now until November 30th. Lease the all-new Jeep Grand Cherokee for $199 a month. 2005 Town & Country Stow & Go minivans, $129 a month. 2005 Jeep Liberty 4x4s or 2005 Sebring Sedan loaded, only $99 a month, your choice. And at Parkway, you can get a great deal on a Pacifica, and there is no waiting list. Buy it and drive it. So stop shopping for the best deal and go to Parkway Chrysler Jeep and get the best deal. Only Parkway will give you an extra $2,500 for your trade-in. And from now through November 30th, Parkway will take the worry out of lease pull-ahead. If you don't qualify for the regular lease pull-ahead and your payoff is less than $3,000, Parkway will get you out of your old lease and into a new one for free. So you do not want to miss out on the great deals and all the extras at the month-end sale going on now till November 30th, only at Parkway Chrysler Jeep on Gratiot at 16 and a half mile in Clinton Township, where you just show up, sign up, and ride.
Check your local paper for details.
The new CD from local artist Jay LeBang, The Writ, is now available. The Writ was recorded right here in Detroit and features 14 new tracks, all written and performed by Jay LeBang, including Don't Waste Your Time, Worship the Sun, and September 15th. Get the new CD, Writ, from Jay LeBang at Slick Disc in Trenton, Rockbox in Southgate, Dearborn Music on Michigan Avenue, Rock of Ages in Garden City, Dearborn Music on Canton Center Road North, Sam Goody in the Southland Mall, and online at cdbaby.com. The new CD from local artist Jay LeBang, Writ, is available now. Find out more online at jaylebang.com.
Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Worby.
As I walk this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity. Oh yeah, I ask myself, is all hope gone? Is there only pain, hatred, and misery? Oh, time I feel like this inside. There's one thing I wanna know. What's so funny about peace, love, understanding? Ooh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
All right, welcome back to the broadcast. 313-298-WRIF. Again, that's off the CD of songs that someone made for me. And I don't know who that was. That's the old Elvis Costello song, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. Well, if you're conservative, then it is just a big joke, right? You're a girly man if you believe in peace, love, and understanding or something like that. They really are the problem, aren't they? Let's see. We're talking about the big punch up and punch out, I guess, at the palace in the in Auburn Hills, Michigan, and where these basketball players. I'm saying this. A lot of people are listening nationally and internationally, where these Indiana Pacer players went into the stands and started whacking fans because of big dispute, but things can get worse in sports. A dispute among deer hunters over a tree stand in northwestern Wisconsin erupted Sunday in a series of shooting that left 5 people dead and 3 wounded. Man, can't let anybody get into your tree stand, can you? The other little part of the world that the U.S. is involved in, Afghanistan, they just reached a new record. Ought to be proud. Afghanistan opium production jumped 64% to a record of 324,000 acres this year, so it's expanding. And drug exports now account for more than 60% of the economy. Remember, they just had that election. Everything's going swimmingly with our allies. Actually, our allies are these bandit chieftains. Taliban had thrown these bandits out, and now they're back. In fact, George Bush wrote a check for $43 million to the Taliban in April of 2001 because the Taliban, and they didn't go for no drug growing. They're pretty strict, being religious fanatics. Gee, who's that sound like? Bush gave him $43 million of our tax money. According to Antonio Maria Costa, executive director of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, this year Afghanistan has established a double record, the highest drug cultivation in the country's history and the largest in the world. And we're footing the bill for a lot of this still. I mean, Bush gives them $43 million, but this country has 60 million, or 60% of it goes for drug production. We provide, when I use we, I don't mean like the United States, I mean like you and I paying taxes. Provide the rest, because that's what the Afghan government, so-called, it's not really a government. You take away the props, that is the U.S. military, it's gone in a second. So it's not really a government in any true, authentic sense. But we're paying for it all. It's our money. Here's another headline. It's about all we need. Iraq assessments, insurgents not giving up. Well, let's kill more people and wreck more cities and see what that brings. Let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing?
Doing good.
I think the singer before the last one, I think that was John Cougar Mellencamp. Sounded like him.
Singing the Peace, Love, and Understanding?
No, the one before that that you introduced the last set to.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm so ADD, I totally forgot it. What was it about?
something to do with protesting.
Yeah.
Which is what I wanted to talk to you about. I think there should be...
Go ahead.
I think we should serve... I'm in the union. I think the union should serve notice on the Democratic Party that we're no longer just going to support them, because the last election, the best choice we had was Kerry, but he was basically a pale imitation of Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Supported NAFTA, supported the war. I think we need to fill up the streets. There ought to be protests in front of courthouses and federal buildings. There ought to be more organizing to try and get more people on the streets protesting the war.
Certainly the war, but certainly all the economic issues as well.
Rancid populism that they seem to practice where, they... gay rights and gay marriage, Okay, I vote. I don't want gays marrying, so I vote against it. And I get tax cuts for the wealthy.
Mm-hmm. You're not talking about yourself. Yeah, you're not talking about yourself, but that's the reasoning. Yeah, I mean, I have a whole sheath of things here. The federal government will be able to require millions of college students to shoulder more of the cost of their education under a new spending bill approved by the Republicans. 100,000 more students may lose their federal grants entirely. Soaring interest compounds credit card paying for millions.
That's actually kind of wise on their part, because that'll drive more students to enlist in the Army.
There you go. Yeah.
I can get the GI Bill if I live through it.
In Tennessee, there was this health plan that was inaugurated a decade ago, and 430,000 people are going to be, these are poorer people, going to be kicked off the rolls, so they're not going to have adequate health care. Angela Ray, the mother of a severely ill 12-year-old girl in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, said, "In this country, rich as it is, people shouldn't have to choose whether their child will live or die." And on the other hand, billions more. What do we spend in Iraq so far? $143 billion?
And they just voted for another $860 billion in overspending so they can borrow $860 billion to continue financing cuts for the rich and a useless, moral, unjust war.
How about this? Detroit schools to lose 4,000 jobs to red ink.
Oh, great. Well, again, more people to join the Army.
40 of the district's 255 schools may close. I mean, what more? What has to be done to people in this country?
But George Bush has spiritual values.
He does.
He does. He's a very moral and upright man. And as far as who killed the Kennedys, well, it was you and me.
So sang the Rolling Stones, right?
Yep, sympathy for the devil. And since I've got sympathy for George Bush, you know, I guess I've got sympathy for the devil.
There you go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Jay, our next caller is at... I had it down. Thank you. You already told me. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. It's Peter Werby with you. Hi.
Hi, Peter. This is Stephanie in Detroit.
Hi, Stephanie.
I want to say first that I agree completely with the last caller, and I want to talk about how we do this. Normally in the news and in the media and our daily concerns, war would take precedence over, you know, it'd be the front page, it'd be the first thing we talk about on the call-in show.
Yeah.
But we got to find something louder because it's being used to manipulate us, and we got to find some way to bridge to get people in the streets.
Any ideas? I don't. I mean, if everybody who sent me an email this week would have turned out at some of the demonstrations that have occurred over the last week or so, they would have been 3 and 4 times bigger. People say, I agree with everything you say. Thank you for being there. And I'm not trying to either guilt trip people or grab them by the lapels and saying, look, you have to do something. But in a way,
somebody should.
In a way, we do have to do something. Well, I don't like to have what they call the bully pulpit. But
there has to be something. I mean, we're being bullied by the administration. At least a good portion of this country is.
Yeah.
We've got not to control people, but to put something louder, something more important. Like, we do have something more important. The Bush administration, what you guys were just talking about, the failure in Afghanistan. We turned this country that we liberated and that we, you know, fought for our nation and our defense, our security, and we turn it into a supplier.
Hmm.
I mean, it was a supplier before, but now it's...
Yeah, where
are you? We were in there. A coalition of 42 nations was in there. And a few years later, this is a big failure.
Well, you know what I don't understand? So, how could Bush have screwed up so many things?
Exactly.
And tens of millions of people, I mean, even if he did steal the election, still close to 60 million people said, oh, we're going to forgive him for 9-1-1, for lying about weapons of mass destruction, for $2 a gallon gas, for ruining all the regulations about the environment, and on and on and on, eroding workers' rights. And I mean, here's a guy that says, when he asked about evolution, he said, the jury is still out on how our God created the world. Well, the jury's not out at all. Any scientist with any standing or merit within the scientific world subscribes to the theory of evolution as the foundation of biological science. And we have a guy sitting in the White House that doesn't know which is which. You know, maybe just, you know, presto, some God just went, well, I got an idea. Let's make all of this at once, and we're going to have little sea dragons at the bottom of the ocean, and we'll have birds that go to Costa Rica and all of that. I mean, this is too pathetic for words. I keep telling all my friends, this too shall pass. But these wackos that have installed themselves in positions of power may have the capacity to totally destroy the country that was created by the founding fathers, who didn't want anybody like George Bush or the rest of these nutballs in political office. You want me to tell you how I really feel?
No, I think, and you hit pretty close to the way I really feel, too. The only thing I can think of is flooding the media. I have the greatest respect for you, Bill Maher, Al Franken, everybody who stood, Moby, organizing MoveOn.org. That was a huge movement. Howard Dean. But it's not enough.
Well,
not just about money.
It is not. And it's kept on the margins. The people that you mentioned, including when I was doing national radio, everywhere we broadcast, it was an overwhelming hit. but this was not enough. I think I've told this story before. When the people trying to get my show on cities around the country would say, look what he's done in these other cities. And they go, really? Somebody from the left that's really kicking butt in ratings? Yeah. Well, maybe. And then they'd listen to the show and they'd say, oh, he's too far out. He's too far left. He's this or that. And it was always political. It was never, he won't attract an audience or anything like that. It was always, always, always political. I mean, again, in this city, which is in this area, overwhelmingly Democratic, overwhelmingly liberal, and all you can get on a regular basis, you know, the five-day-a-week hosts, are far-right-wing wackos. And so something's wrong. And if the reason the people in power keep it like that is because if there was equal representation, I mean, as it is, imagine this, it was just like a couple of percentage points, because there's enough people that don't believe everything that Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or people like that say, or aren't affected by ads from the Republicans who don't live their lives through fear. Who aren't prejudiced against people of other races or sexual orientations, or don't despise women, and on and on like that. That there was 55 million of us that depended on our own either small, very, very small communities or organizations, some liberal churches, unions, and what have you. But I think most of those tens of millions of people that voted for against George W. Bush had to, on their own, with no way to publicly verify or validate their beliefs, withstood this onslaught. And what people need, first off, they need communities. They need communities where that can keep their views can keep being validated. And then also they do need public spokespeople. So that last part is difficult, because at least in the commercial world, it's politics even over profit, because ultimately politics translates into profit. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Stephanie. Bye-bye. Let's see, Barb from Royal Oak, or is it Bob from Royal Oak? They share the same email. Said, Peace, Love. They know so much about music. They've written me before. What's so funny, the acoustic version of What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding, they say was Nick Lowe who wrote that song for Elvis Costello. I didn't know that. Are you going to mention Gannett, which owns the Detroit News, buying all the little newspapers and announcing it so quickly after the election? Well, you guys are going to have to call in, because although I got an email on that, I can't really... I can't remember all the details. All right, moving onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Luke from Taylor.
Hi, Luke.
I have a question. Is forcing your child to go to church unconstitutional?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, because it's probably happening to you, right?
Yeah.
No.
No, because my mother forces me to go to church like 5:30 in the morning, Monday through Friday.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then Sunday.
That's going to have the opposite effect, I suspect.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know how to get out of this or anything, because every time I try to get out, she punishes me in some way.
How old are you?
I am 16.
Well, you're going to have to hang on for a couple more years. And, it's, the younger you are, I mean, the lower you are on any totem pole, obviously the less power you have by definition, right? So, I mean, how society views you. So youth, the younger you are, I mean, obviously if you're 6 years old rather than 16, just being taken to church, nobody would think much of. But even still, you're a minor, there's nothing much you can do. And fighting it could mean a couple of things. I mean, you're probably miserable now if you don't want to be there. Who likes to be forced to go anywhere? That's why I hated school, because I was forced to go to school. Think of something else. I mean, use that as time. What could you do? You know this thing. How long do you have to go in the mornings?
About an hour.
You know what meditating is?
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder. I mean, I'm asking you to do something that would probably drive me out of my mind, particularly when I was 16. I wasn't real good about sitting in places, including school. But if you could just go, you know, kind of go, when I'm here, I'm angry, I'm uptight, I'm just filled with anger and resentment towards my mother and resentment towards what's being said, is just kind of sit there and try to soften your body and breathe deeply for an hour. If you could do that, and just kind of have a beatific smile on your face, maybe they would think you've learned it, and you could probably say, "I'd like to read the Bible at home, Mom."
Oh, I've tried that.
That didn't work. Well, you might be just screwed till you're 18, then.
Yeah, that's what I think.
And I notice you have a biblical name, but so do I. All right. I don't know why people do that. I mean, you're really old enough, to make your own decisions. But what happens? What if you say I'm not going?
I got the TV and DVD player out of my room. My mom's starting to make me quit my band I'm in.
Well, I don't know, man. Just in a couple years, you're going to be out of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, of course, if someone is that deeply connected to religion, many ways, if you just like say, "Look, I'm 18, I'm not going, and if I have to move out, I'm moving out," he'd probably say the devil's got you and cut you loose. I mean, it's pretty hard when parents and children. I was lucky. My parents were always very liberal, and kind of that's where I learned everything, the basic values. But when I've talked to people, my friends that were, I mean, some of them are still, like, they're my age, and they still are arguing with their parents about politics. And, yeah, it's not much fun. But at some point, the parents have to make a truce with the kid and say, "Hey, look, you know, this is what I'm doing. This is me. I want to look like this. I want to think like this. I want to play this music. And you've got to have some trust in me and confidence that my choices are, although they're different from yours, work for me." I don't know. That's about all I got to say, Luke. I'm sorry to hear that. It would have, I didn't come from a religious family, so I never had to face that. But it sounds awful. I think I'd rather do without a DVD player. All right, good luck on it. Report. Hey, did you ever learn about the Kennedy assassination in school?
A little bit, yeah. Have you ever heard of Bill Hicks, the comedian?
Yeah, you know Bill Hicks?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. Like, just some of the stuff he said is just pretty smart.
Yeah.
Pretty intelligent on it.
And Bill Hicks, he even, didn't he die 10 years ago?
Yeah, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was a real loss. I'd like to play some of his stuff on this show, but I'd have to have lots of beeps and bleeps in there, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
All right, Luke, best of luck.
Bye.
Religion can be so authoritarian. As I always say, all the religious people I know, mostly Christian, overwhelmingly Christian, they're extraordinarily liberal. Some are even very radical. See that their Christianity forms them of religious drives them towards peace and social justice. Let me see. The last singer sounded a lot like John Mellencamp. I don't know. Someone said that about the other one as well. I want to get some of this. All right, I can't do this right now. Where's our next caller, Jay? Three. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, how are we doing this morning?
Good.
Or this morning, this evening. First of all, this is Tim from Port Huron. First of all, I wanted to say I bleed Democratic blood. I worked on the Kerry campaign. I worked on Gore's campaign. I just want to say that Democrats, first of all, need to get over the election. They lost. George Bush was a better showman, and that's all it turned out to be. What I called, though, about is, what do you think George Bush should do about what's going on in Sudan? I feel it's the Holocaust of our generation.
Well, it certainly is a horrible situation. It's one of those things, though. the fear, the United States has little or no ability to send any troops anywhere. You may have heard me earlier talking about they're calling up people in their 50s. You look at some of the people that are dying in Iraq, and they're in their 40s. I've seen people in their 50s listed in the list of American dead. So the United States doesn't have any capacity to intervene anywhere with in great numbers. But, yeah, we're looking at another Rwanda.
I feel that, I mean, maybe not even not troops or anything, maybe just some kind of aid or something, you know. Get the U.N. more involved because, sure, that we didn't look for the U.N. for support in Iraq, but we need to get the U.N. involved a little bit more in Sudan because I feel that if this keeps up, this is gonna be really bad on our aspect of politics.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, it depends on who it is. I have to say, most of us know. I hope everybody knows when I was talking about the massacres, the genocide in Rwanda, that it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't really hit us with the great enormity that it was, and. I mean, it's not identified yet as this crisis. In fact, I would be willing to bet that great numbers of the people listening aren't even 100% sure what we're talking about.
Well, and that's sad to me. I mean, it really is, because by the end of the year, almost 1 million people would die in that country.
Man.
And to me, that's just, I mean, we need to, as a country, we need to open our eyes on stuff like that.
You know, we never think about that. I mean, think about what happened to our national psyche when 3,000 Americans died. And yet when we hear 100,000 Iraqis have died as a result of the U.S. invasion, or you're saying 1 million people in Sudan, and it's just kind of, huh. But think about the grief that was experienced directly by the families and the national sense of outrage and grief that we experience. It's sort of thought, I mean, there is sort of this, I don't know, Western, actually less lack of sensitivity to it, is we sort of expect those people. You know, the definition of Greek tragedy, only the highborn can suffer.
Right.
So it's a tragedy of historic proportions on September 11th. But when you tell people, well, 100,000 Iraqi civilians, mostly women and children, have died since March 2003, people kind of look at you kind of blankly, like, yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
Those colored people are always kind of dying in great numbers, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
All right, Tim, thank you very much. Thanks for calling the broadcast. 313-298-WRIF. Brandon, this is, right now we're in the day of the 41st anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. In an hour we'll be playing a show about that. Nothing about conspiracy, it's kind of just the broadcasts and the impact that it had on people. But Brandon writes it, in high school, they told us the whole lone gunman idea. All right. So it's Lee Harvey Oswald. Once I got to college and watched JFK by Oliver Stone and did my own research for a project, I agree with the version laid out in the movie. I can't even remember what it was, but it was a conspiracy. I remember that. Doughy from Roseville writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I was investigating the Watergate Nixon tapes, and somewhere among them, even Nixon said JFK's assassination sounded like a conspiracy. I think that was true, that he did say that. All right, another call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Well, Peter.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
From Dearborn. Now, I want to. I've studied the Kennedy assassination a lot, and. But first, I want to echo something on the election. I have to disagree with that last caller. We don't need to get over this election just too quickly. We need to investigate fully voter fraud and election manipulation here, because we know it affected the outcome of the 2000 election. So even if it didn't affect the outcome of this election, it left unchecked, it will affect the outcome of future elections for sure. So. On the Kennedy assassination, I think there's more than enough in the Warren Commission whitewash report that proves it's a conspiracy. For one, there's the grassy knoll. When officers and people like ran up the grassy knoll, there was somebody there flashing a Secret Service identification badge. And the Warren Commission concluded that this was a phony person. Yet, they can conclude there's no conspiracy? That's impossible. And also, The first bullet supposedly hit Kennedy and Connolly. But after the first bullet hits, Connolly is still holding his hat and his wrist and hand are intact.
Mm-hmm.
And, but of course, after the first bullet hit them both, his wrist was shattered. The bullet was shattered. There's no way his wrist and hand are intact and holding his hat after the first shot.
What do they call it? Did they call that, was it the magic bullet, or?
The magic bullet, right.
Yeah, yeah.
First bullet was the magic, first shot was the magic bullet. The second shot missed and hit the curb. And the third shot supposedly is the one that hit him in the head. But we all know that came from the grassy knoll.
Well, I don't know if we all know, but in fact, who
there's
is this?
There's enough to know. There's,
well, here's what I always think. A lot of that, this comes and goes. They try to have like Olympic marksmen. Although Oswald had been a marksman in the Marines. I mean, this whole thing goes off to the Soviet Union. He's in fair play for Cuba. This committee that was pro-Castro. I mean, the whole thing is so weird. If it would have been like Hinckley, the guy that shot Reagan, he's just there, and there's nothing too much more about him. Although, there wasn't much there about him. But everything about Oswald is very confused and very, very deep, and so many things beg explanation. Well, one thing, he has this World War I Mannlicher Carcano, it's a bolt-action rifle with a scope on it. I don't know how many of you have ever shot with a scope. I have, and I haven't done it much, so it's extraordinarily difficult. But let's say he knew how to do it. But you've got this pretty elementary scope, not like the stuff that they got the snipers in Iraq now. So he's got a bead on the president, right, with his first shot. And, of course, he's not shaking or anything because he's not doing anything of any great import. Well, of course, the adrenaline must be flowing to such an incredible degree that one can hardly imagine. He gets off one shot. He then has to lower the rifle, rack another shell, you know, eject the one shell that's in there and rack another one in. Find his target again with the scope, shoot another time. I tend to doubt anybody could really do it. They had to involve another person.
That weapon was so bad that they stopped. The Italians stopped making it during World War II, actually. It was a World War II rifle because it was so bad. It was so inaccurate. It was so likely to malfunction, blow up in someone's face, that they dubbed it the rifle that couldn't even kill anybody.
What was it? Was it an Italian rifle?
Italian, Mannlicher Carcano. And the company that made that weapon issued a statement right after the Kennedy assassination saying, "We don't believe our weapon, this particular weapon, is even capable of doing what it did." They totally disavowed it.
Let me ask you this, though. Why still the interest? It's really faded with me. I mean, I tend to often talk about it on this show every November 22nd, but
to me, it's one of the biggest events that's ever happened in this world. Certainly in the century of the 1990s,
yeah.
The 1900s, rather. And as far as who might have done it, I saw a video of this French mobster who had confessed, and his confession sounded very legitimate. He knew a lot about the inside workings. I think they hired a team of Italians, maybe two teams, to pull it off, and they just chose whichever was the best team.
This was the mob?
No, the CIA.
Oh, the CIA.
The
All
CIA
right.
would hire the actual shooters.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely...
And the CIA, because Kennedy wanted to get out of Vietnam.
Oh, the host reason. If you see this movie called Executive Action...
Right.
With a lot of big stars in it, like Burt Lancaster, it spells the whole thing out.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, every reason why, two terms for JFK, two terms for Bobby, two terms for Teddy, they're going to, you know, push civil rights and all that, we'll push world peace, we can't have this. And it's a great movie and pretty much...
Well, I'm always a little shaky about getting history from... from fictionalized films, but they sometimes can point us in the right direction. There's a film out called Rush to Judgment, put together by Mark Lane, who was one of the original researchers. There wasn't even an index for the Warren Commission report. That was an independent researcher put one together. Anyway, he's got this film, and in it, in fact, I talk about this in my interview, but so I'll You risk hearing it twice. I saw this film, and they're dragging Oswald through the Dallas police station. He's been arrested in this theater, and he resisted arrest. He's been knocked around. He looks totally confused and angry and not focused. And suddenly, there's a mic thrown in his face, and they say to him, "Why did you kill President Kennedy?" Suddenly, he just becomes absolutely alert, focused, his eyes open wide, and he says, "Oh, so I'm the patsy." oh, so I'm the patsy. And they drag him away. And I thought, wow, wow. Hey, thanks for your call. On the other hand, God, you know, folks, if you write these long, long letters, Lysander sends this in, messages, it's hard for me to get a grasp on them, shorter ones. On Kennedy, I was born in 1974, and to answer your question regarding what we were taught in school, I think the story of President Kennedy's assassination could be summed up in one word, Oswald. All right. That's all I can get from that one. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Are you tired of hearing mortgage companies advertising absurdly low rates? Or how about all those programs that are exclusive only to them? Well, the truth is, all these companies work with the same rates and the same programs. They are not exclusive to any one mortgage lender. It's nerve-wracking enough trying to buy a new home or figuring out how you're going to get all your debt paid off. The last thing you need is more stress from a mortgage company throwing unrealistic programs and rates at you. If you're looking for someone who will give you honest answers about your individual situation, whether it's buying a new home, refinancing, or consolidating your debt, then you absolutely need to call Mike Jenkins at First Horizon Home Loans at 877-505-8600, extension 222. You'll receive a free mortgage analysis, and you'll be able to decide for yourself which program is best for you. So call Mike Jenkins with First Horizon Home Loans today and find out how you can get home with less stress. That's 877-505-8600, extension 222. Loan subject to approval. First Horizon Home Loans is an equal housing lender.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Coach Nick Saban after his loss to Auburn over the weekend, and we had to get his thoughts on his replacement, John L. Smith.
I think he's doing a fine job, but first of all, three words. Collagen rebuilding serum. If he's leading the Big Ten in anything, it's dead epidermal cells. I don't think 10 minutes in a tanning bed would kill the guy either.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't like to pass advice along. I let the guy make his own mistakes.
Well, you know, he's pretty pasty looking, actually. You're right.
I think that's why he left Louisville. They used the gray for the coaching shirts, and he looked so washed out and ashy. I think a guy complected like that, at some point, has got to coach a team that has primary colors.
Well, Nick, not to bring this whole thing down, but what went wrong against Auburn?
Well, you mix together an unfamiliar 1875 Revlon with a Bumble and Bumble Stylers, throwing some unforeseen humidity, and that's what you get.
That's not like you to blame defeat on weather conditions, though.
I'm not talking about the game. I'm talking about that sweat-soaked, wind-blown mess on the top of my head.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program on the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
When it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rock with the Riff.
Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF.
Your ride home rocks with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your Riff Rockin' Requests. Calling your Riff Rockin' Requests to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF.
Email them to arthurp@wrif.com.
Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win your yourself some killer Riff swag and let the ride home rock with the Riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penhalla.
Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station three times a day at noon, 5, and 9.
It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll, 101 WRIF. Riff.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with Maury Povich.
Drew and Mike, you are not the father.
Oh, thank God.
That's great. We're going to use that time.
Spin doctors dance while a young man continue to die. All for the sake of the corporate American pie. It's a conspiracy of silence. It's breaking us down. The conspiracy of silence. The truth won't be found.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. Hope at least we give you a little, I hate to call, I'm taking the back. I'm going to say give you a little bit of the truth here. Anybody starts telling you they're giving you the truth, look out. Check your pocketbook for openers. Bird Boy writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com about the election. Simple as this. If we can put a man on the moon, then we could have a reliable method of voting. The only reason we do not is because of those in control of it want to be able to manipulate the process. P.S. Guess who was head of the CIA when JFK was killed? I can't guess. I'm sorry. Sorry to say that. Vegan writes in the call talk, yes, at Yahoo. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think LBJ gave the CIA the green light. Let me try one more time. I think LBJ gave the CIA the green light. It's always an inside job, isn't it? That more on the JFK killing. Let me see. We got some more. The CIA murdered Kennedy, says King B, writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And the limo driver was one of the assassins. I can prove this. If you have the address at WRSF or some address where I can send you a video, I can send you a copy and you will be able to see for yourself. Well, if you go to my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com, and, let me see. Where did I think you go? Yeah, go to On the Air on the top bar, and it'll give you the snail mail address. Well, I can tell you, it's just me, care of WRIF, One Radio Plaza, and we're in a suburb of Detroit, Ferndale, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Yeah, I will take a look at that. Barb writes in. Says on Friday, Gannett, now those are the right-wingers who own the Detroit News, they announced they have bought the Hometown Communications Network publications, the Observer-eccentric papers in Birmingham, West Bloomfield, Livonia, Southfield, Farmington, Garden City, Canton, Rochester, Plymouth, Redford, Clarkston, Troy, Lake Orion, Oxford, and Westland Observer Eccentrics, the Milford Times, the Northville Record, the Novi News, the South Lyon Herald, the Mirror Publications, which, oh my God, they printed stuff about me. They'll never do it now. Berkeley, Huntington Woods, Clawson, Ferndale, Pleasant Ridge, Royal Oak, Sterling Heights, a buttload of papers in Lansing, some shopping guides, and telephone directories. So that's the deal. With Bush in the White House, there'll be no ousting of Michael Powell. I'm trying to get to the end of this. In the meantime, Gannett cut the medical benefits for retirees at Detroit newspapers, slashing the income of people who made their company profitable. A retiree will pay 50% more for health insurance for their spouses, a cut that was made unilaterally without much warning. So we have now this this right-wing media conglomerate that is taking over all the suburban papers. Ain't that cute? We need some independent media, don't we? Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, this is Kevin. I just had a common question about Iraq.
Sure.
I guess we're supposed to be having this election there in January.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, you know, if the numerical proportion of the population is truly represented in Iraq, you'd have the Shias come to power, and it almost seems from reading in our newspapers that they're almost unanimous in wanting us out, because they control everything in number, but they would want to have all the power, and why would they tolerate us being there?
Mm-hmm.
So what would our reaction be? I mean, if they said get out, what would we do then?
Well, I even hate to say we. Bush has said if they are, so I don't think Bush, but to some of the people that have been asked that question, like Rumsfeld, and said, well, we would respect the wishes of any independent government, although I tend to doubt that. I mean,
right. I mean, I think they'd probably make up some other excuse at that point.
Yeah, I mean, there's too much invested in this. I mean, the idea of invading and occupying Iraq goes back quite a ways. We, for a long time, played the Saudi Arabia card, figuring that we could maintain this hideous religious royal dictatorship, and that looks pretty unstable. So the United States, well, not so much the United States, but these neoconservatives, as you may know, this Project for a New American Century, which is dependent, makes us vastly into the future dependent upon the occupation of the part of the world where we are definitely not loved. I mean, this is a mistake of catastrophic proportions, as it is. When I was reading that economic news before about schools shutting down and health programs being cut and on and on like that, all of that could be financed by what we are giving to destroy, to American corporations to first destroy and then later rebuild Iraq. I mean,
sure.
It's insane.
Sure, I agree, and I just want to give my answer about who was responsible for the murder of Kennedy.
Sure.
I think it was the military-industrial complex, because by then they had already gained substantial power.
Mm-hmm.
The last president to directly talk about it and take him on was Eisenhower. And also, if you ever watched the movie 13 Days with Kevin Costner, where
yeah.
they talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis, there are some very disturbing hints in that movie. I mean, not that Hollywood knows more than factual, you know, circumstances, but there is a lot of aggression from people like Curtis LeMay and people who wanted to go out and bomb and start World War III and stuff like that. I see a very strong role for that kind of segment of the, unfortunately, of our society.
Yeah, it's time, I think, to go watch Dr. Strangelove again. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And where's our money gone? Some of it goes directly. Most of it. Remember, I've talked about this before, and it's on my website as well. The Carlyle Group and other war industries that are supported by our tax dollars. And I was just reading this thing in the Sunday Times about where to invest, and said, yeah, you know, invest in these weapons firms, because under Bush, they're going to just go up in value. And they, where do they get their money? Well, they get their money from the U.S. government. Where does the U.S. government get its money? From us. Does it go to schools? No. Does it go to the health programs? No. Does it go for roads? No. It goes to these arms manufacturers, including ones that are connected directly with the Bush family. Then there's the other part of the Bush-Co racket. Once countries like Iraq is destroyed, then Halliburton and Bechtel and all these pals, these rich pals, are not even pals, some of them are directly connected still, to like Cheney, who's still getting money from Halliburton. They rebuild it. But some of it goes directly. Here's an article that was in the November 17th New York Times. As fire crackles in Fallujah, GIs look to rebuild a wasteland. So this is how we've liberated the country. We've turned it into a wasteland. I don't think that last person was Kevin. Sorry about that, by the way. And this is an article that's talking a little, it's in Fallujah, and they're talking about the heart of this nearly deserted city. This is, imagine, what did it have, like 300,000? So what size is that? Like Windsor or Grand Rapids or something like that. And a foreign army said, we're attacking the 1,000 people or so that are in there, and then just proceeded to destroy the city. And I'm sure the people will be very understanding. Anyways, A group of Marine Civil Affairs officers took in the view. They had established a command post in a wrecked gymnasium where emergency payments from a $40 million fund will eventually be given out. So these Marines in this Marine Civil Affairs unit have $40 million. Schools are closing. Roads are crap. People are losing their health care. And we've got $40 million in a fund. What does it do? Well, Colonel Michael Oliver said, first we blow up your house, then we pay you to rebuild it. He recalled residents of the southern city of Najaf who protested damage to their homes in fighting last summer, saying, this little mud hut's worth $1,000. Colonel said, so you give them $1,000 and they're happy. I mean, besides the... I mean, this is the words of conquerors. This is so unworthy. I don't know. I can't even think of the depth of my feelings about all this. But just at the level, if you have no humanity, I mean, I usually don't associate much humanity with conservatives, but if you have no humanity, are you really willing to let your pockets get picked like that? Our pockets? You have a $40 million fund of our tax dollars that they give out in cash, in American dollars frequently, to people whose houses have been destroyed. Phew. All right, let's continue onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. John.
Hi, John.
I wanted to comment about the caller who called in about what's going on in the Darfur region.
Yeah.
And part of the reason there's no real public outcry is, aside from, like, two-minute things that they do on the news once a month, or like 60 Minutes did a 10-minute story a couple weeks ago, they don't talk about it. And so there's just this public apathy towards it. Mm-hmm. They don't care.
Well, the darker the people, the less the concern. I mean, that's sort of a rule of thumb with Americans, I'd say.
And then...
Let me just say, though, that's not entirely true. It has to do with what the media identifies. If suddenly, for some reason or other, Fox News or one of these channels would have decided this is a situation of great importance and began showing what's happening in that region of the Sudan, suddenly we would all have the same concern we had for the in the Peterson trial, in the Lacey Peterson murder trial.
Yeah, but now on the election, I believe firmly that there was foul play in Ohio and Florida, but as to why so many people voted for Bush, it's because of the whole misinformation that was out there. Because you listen to these polls, and the majority of these people who voted for him still believe the lies that he said about a connection between Hussein and Al Qaeda, and
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, a lot of these folks get insulted when you say that Bush voters are stupid, and then you come to find out that they believe things that easily define them as being stupid, like things that even the president has denied, that there ever was a connection between Saddam Hussein and September 11th. Some of these people, some of these Bush voters, think that that Saddam Hussein used weapons of mass destruction to fend off the American invasion.
Yeah.
What planet are these people on? We know what planet they're on, right? Planet Bush, out past Uranus.
Now I had one question for you. What have you heard about the what's going on with the Tom DeLay?
God, I didn't say things like that. I tend not even to bring up. I mean, here is just this this Republican leader of the House involved in blatantly undemocratic and probably criminal activity, and his party had a rule that said if you get accused of a felony, you have to step down from leadership positions. So he had them reverse the rules because he's figuring he's going to get indicted. Well, fortunately, he is on the ropes. And maybe we'll get rid of the Roach Man. He was an exterminator before all of this began. All right, thanks a lot. I got to rush on. Hi, WRIF. Whoa, what is that weird sound? Say, we got another call rolling? All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, we're on.
We're on, yeah.
How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Oh, not too bad.
What's up? Your turn. You're on the air.
Well, I didn't vote for George Bush. That's for sure.
Okay. But
we're trying to figure out if Channel 56 on public TV on PBS if it's working without your rabbit ears on.
No, it's off the air.
Why is it off the air?
If you go to their website, I think it's WTVS.org or .com, or you can just Google it. It explains that they had that one of the storms, they sustained some bad technical damage. So the public station is off, even though they're running ads on Detroit stations talking about some of the programming.
Huh. Do you think it had anything to do with that Aurora Borealis thing that happened the other 2 weeks ago or whatever?
I don't know. I didn't know. No, I mean, it was like rainstorm or something like that. But they actually, if you go to their website, they have, I don't know whether they got hit by lightning, but they have a photograph of some pretty messed up equipment.
Huh. Well, we thought just because it had the BBC on it and a few other news things that they didn't want you to see, that's why they took it off the air or whatever.
Nah, they'll be back on. But, again, that just shows the deep suspicion that so many of us hold of official institutions. All right, thank you, my friend. The director of the CIA, according to King B, was a thug named Alan Dulles who was on that whitewash known as the Warren Commission. After Kennedy fired him, he, along with Gerald Ford, the director of the Chase Manhattan Bank, and other shady characters comprised the Warren Commission. All right? That's what he says. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete, this is Eric from Southgate.
Hi, Eric.
I got a quick question. Back in, you said a few weeks ago, back in 1960, they changed the tax code on income over $5 million?
Yeah, something like that, right.
You don't know much more than that?
Well, I know. In fact, this was not the Republicans that did it, but under Kennedy, they reduced the amount of taxes that the ultra wealthy paid.
Okay, and that was under Kennedy. I was wondering if it was under the president before him. And do you know that anything about Ken Kesey and the political pranksters?
Ken Kesey.
Yeah.
Well, I know some about them. They had they were pretty wild characters that took a lot of LSD and rode around in a bus, a psychedelically painted bus called Further. I think there's books out about them by them.
There's a movie out called On Further with Woody Harrelson, and it's an independent film, and I figure it'd be playing in Ann Arbor. Do you know the name of the independent film theaters out there?
It would probably be shown like at the Michigan Theater, but here at either the Maple or the Main. But somewhere or other, either I saw a trailer for it, a preview of it, or something. But a lot of this stuff, do you use the Internet?
No.
Okay. Well, then it's good. Don't.
The old Peter, where he wouldn't even watch TV.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I still don't watch TV. Now I just sit there and look at a computer monitor.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Pete.
All right, thanks a lot. Yeah, that Woody Harrelson film, I think, is in the works. Any more callers, or should we say goodnight for now? All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Have a happy Thanksgiving. I said at the beginning of the show, I'm leaving town, so the website is not going to change. But take advantage of not just the first page, but all the links. There's incredible stuff on it. PeterWerbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. Oh, I forgot, I didn't say this. I got bumper stickers available, a friend of mine put together, that say, bring the troops home. Damn, why wasn't I saying this throughout the program? Bring the troops home. And you can put them on your car. And some people have said, man, aren't these right-wingers going to yell at me and all that? Well, I had one on my car up till recently that said, Bush lied, people died. And I probably got 20 people over the 6 months or so I had it on that would come up to me and say, where do I get those? So this one, available on my website, Bring the Troops Home. Good idea. We'll be right back with some interesting interviews.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back right after this.
Okay, so my friend Sherry with a Y.
Howdy, y'all.
Sherry with an I.
Oh, hello there. Don't you know?
And Cherry with a C-H and an I-E, I think.
It's pronounced Cherry like the fruit.
All moved here from the corners of the country with their new Harleys just in time for their 1,000-mile service.
Where can we get service?
Y'all. Don't you know?
So I take them to Motown Harley-Davidson in Taylor, where they offer $99.95 for 1,000-mile service on motorcycles purchased at any other Harley dealership nationwide.
Well, butter my butt and call me a biscuit. That's at least $200 at other dealers. Bless their heart.
For crying out loud there, fella. $99.95 for 1,000-mile service is better than cheddar.
$99.95. That's...
Yes?
That's...
Yes?
Oh. For sales, specials, events, or just to look at cool pictures, log on to MotownHarley.com. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegram just north of Eureka.
Remember, guys, chicks dig a guy in a real motorcycle.
Buy, sell, or rent your bike at Motown.
Okay. The party is here at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Every week, Leopard's Lounge brings you new girls from all over the world, so it never gets boring. And these girls are hot. And unlike other gentlemen's clubs, which we won't mention, Leopard's Lounge never has a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking. It's an offer you can't refuse. And this Tuesday night, don't miss the special Corona Bavaria Beer Night with special import beer prices and tons of free giveaways all night long. Plus, the Molson Extreme girls will be on hand giving away free pictures. If that isn't enough, the Corona Bikini Girls will also be there to help you have a great time. You work hard, so you deserve a night out. Why not make it this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge? Sit back and enjoy the finer things in life. You know what I'm talking about. Beer, sexy, beautiful women, and tons of free stuff. Hey, it just doesn't get any better. Don't miss the fun this Tuesday night with 101 WRIF and Leopard's Lounge in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8888. For Leopard's Lounge and Broil.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Please allow me to adjust my pants. Should I have a dance, the good time dance. And put the onlookers and innocent bystanders into a train.
Listen up, you stinking maggots. Neil Fallon from Clutch here. Join Clutch at the State Theater, downtown Detroit, Friday, November 26th.
Clutch with special guests Fu Manchu and High on Fire.
It's on fire.
Friday, November 26th at the State Theater. Tickets on sale now at all Ticketmaster outlets.
Wake up. This is Neil Fallon from Clutch. I will see you Friday, November 26th when Clutch plays the State Theater.
So, what's it gonna be? Thanksgiving leftovers with the family or Clutch at the State Theater? Clutch with Fu Manchu and High on Fire. November 26th. All ages welcome. Buy your tickets at cc.com, Ticketmaster.com, all Ticketmaster outlets, Record Time and Ferndale, or charge by phone at 248-645-6. 6666. Clutch. Friday, November 26th. State Theater, downtown Detroit.
Davidson and Buell and Centerline invite you to their 17th annual Christmas Open House, Saturday, November 27th from 10 to 4. To celebrate, Detroit Harley-Davidson is offering 10 to 75% off all parts and accessories, clothing, and collectibles. Did you know that Detroit Harley-Davidson still has a few 2004 Harleys available and at blowout prices starting at $2,000 to $2,700 below MSRP? Hey, don't want an 04 Harley and tired of having to pay $2,000 to $3,000 over list price at other dealers for 05 Harleys? Then come on in and get Detroit Harley's price and save. All models are sold MSRP. And for your holiday shopping needs, Detroit Harley-Davidson is now open Sundays 10 to 3 until Christmas. Don't miss their Christmas open house, Saturday, November 27th, 10 to 4 p.m.
Detroit Harley-Davidson. Detroit Harley-Davidson.
This is Night Call. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. As you know, this show is mostly oriented around interviewing authors, and books are very important to me. Most of the important things I've learned are from books, from authors, and television, like, next to zero. And sometimes people say, well, I'll mention a subject, and they'll say, what book can you recommend? And it's odd. Often I say, gee, I don't know. Well, if someone said, tell me the story of the civil rights movement, the African-American struggle for equality beginning in the 1950s and even a little earlier, I finally have a book in my hands that I would be overwhelmed to recommend. It's called We Shall Overcome. It's the history of the civil rights movement as it happened. It includes two CDs by that are narrated by Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee, the actress, but it's written by an old friend, Herb Boyd. And Herb Boyd, as you may remember from other appearances on the Peter Werby Show, is an award-winning author and journalist who has published 11 books and countless articles for national magazines and newspapers. We last interviewed him about his book, which was, I have to find it here. I'll introduce my old friend, Herb Boyd. Hi,
yeah.
Herb.
Great to be with you.
Yeah.
What is that, Brother Man?
Not Brother Man. We missed that. Brother Man, the Odyssey of Black Men in American Anthology,
yes.
But then, and I, why am I having trouble? Oh, Race and Resistance.
Oh, Race and Resistance, yes.
African Americans in the 21st Century,
mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to your forthcoming Sugar in Harlem, a biography of Sugar Ray Robinson, the boxer.
Next month.
Well, really? Well, okay, we'll have to get you on quickly then. We Shall Overcome is one of those books that not only tells the story through narrative, but has an incredible amount of photographs that are stirring and heartening and depressing, and these audio CDs, but also the narrative by you, Herb Boyd. And, you know, Herb, one of the worst questions is people say, why did you write this book? But actually, that is an interesting question, because there's lots of histories of the civil rights movement out. And I wonder, maybe you could explain in this your own personal history. You were raised in Detroit, were you?
Indeed.
Yeah. So tell us some about that and why you came to this book.
Well, I think what happened is that being in New York, you know, you're right in the heartbeat of the industry. And one of my purposes for moving there in 1985 was essentially to kind of jumpstart my writing career. I had done several books in Detroit, as you know, working on the history of jazz there with the Jazz Research Institute and the Artist Workshop and what have you. I wanted to jump out there on a national front, and I had an opportunity, and I moved to New York in 1985. And since then, I guess they said 11 books there. Actually, it's 15 books now.
Uh-oh.
It's 15. This is We Shall Overcome is my 14th, and of course the Sugar Ray Robinson book will be the 15th. And what happened with We Shall Overcome, and in fact I talk about it in the author's words to readers,
mm-hmm.
And I say that I did it with a certain amount of reluctance. You know, when they first approached me, the editor, Hillel Black, said, hey, let's do this book. Through my agent, he contacted me, and I say, no, not another book on the civil rights movement. Now, what can I do to make it any more concise or to embellish or enlighten? I say, you know, you can read James Forman's The Making of Black Revolutionaries. You can read all of the Dr. King stuff. You know, John Lewis has it, Andrew Young. I mean, Rosa Parks. I mean, all the books are out there. What do you need from him? He said, well, look, we're talking about a media fusion book. I said, what do you mean by that? He says, this book will be accompanied by two audio CDs. Okay, he got my interest.
Okay.
He got my interest right there. And then, Peter, after doing research, it was like an archaeological dig through the civil rights movement. Because another thing I had in mind is that if I'm going to do a book, then we're going to have to update a number of the dramatic stories coming out of that period. For example, the Emmett Till case.
Sure, which now, probably does not resonate with 90% of the Euro-Americans listening.
Indeed. So now the Justice Department, mainly because of two filmmakers, Keith Beauchamp and Stanley Nelson, have both created and developed two fine documentaries that have looked into this case, and so much so that the Justice Department now is very interested in reopening the case. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that, with Ashcroft stepping aside. Well, maybe it'll even be better.
Herb Boyd, remind us of the Emmett Till case.
Emmett Till was a young black youth, 14 years old, from Chicago, where I am at this point, who ventured down to Mississippi, Money, Mississippi, in 1955. He usually went to Mississippi during the summer to spend vacation time with his relatives there. On this occasion, he, along with four others, including two of his cousins, went to a grocery store, Brian's Grocery Store. And there they encountered the Carolyn Bryant, who was working there for her husband in the store. And as we know, allegedly he whistled at her. Now, I was told that, according to Simeon Wright, his cousin, who was with him at that time, that Emmett actually did whistle at her. He actually did. For a long time, it was just allegedly he whistled, that he may have been a stutterer, and he just mistakenly said something that resembled a whistle, that he, you know, was flirted with her, hey, baby, I'm going to take you out. But Simeon Wright, and I had a chance to interview him, he told me exactly what happened. So I was able to update the case. Well, eventually, that morning, early in like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, Roy Bryant and J.W. Milan, his half-brother, went by Emmett Till's, where Emmett Till was staying with his granduncle, and snatched him out of there and took him away, spirited him off in the night. For 3 days he was missing. Finally, when his body turned up in the Tallahatchie River, Peter, it was battered beyond recognition. And that picture was put in Jet magazine. I saw it as a kid.
Now, I was going to ask you, so you must have been like 11, 12, 13
exactly.
years old. And
exactly.
And people forget, at that era, there was a really parallel black culture that was filled with its own community institutions, including publications, which then was called the Negro Press.
Exactly.
So, and you saw that as a youngster.
I saw it. I was like 15 when I saw it, Peter.
You're older than I thought. Okay.
I was 15, right? I was 15 years old when I saw that, and I was just, his face looked like a potato. I mean, like a battered potato.
Did that frighten you as a young black
I didn't know what to make of it until, you know, later on it was explained to me what had happened to him. You know, I figured it was just an accident. And then the full implications and the full explanation of that situation was given to me. My mother put it all in context for me because I was born in Alabama. And she brought my brother and I out of there when we were like 4 and 5 years old, because she didn't want us to go through all of the kind of stuff that she had experienced as a black woman in the South, particularly the kind of racist aggression that she had seen happen time and time again. So all of this brought it back home to her. Mm-hmm. And then through her recognition of the situation, she explained to us and say, look here, I would never send you back down south for no purposes whatsoever.
Well, Herb, tell us about, let me just keep mentioning the book because people join us as the program goes on. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show. My guest is Detroiter Herb Boyd, who has written this absolutely crucial, what's the word I'm looking at here? You got to fill me in.
I think what happens is that, you know, it's an attempt to really dramatize you a number of the, and give you the emotional connection to some of these events that some people know nothing about and others know a little bit about.
Well, it's the history of the civil rights movement.
Sure.
And, I've been recently reading, Kevin Boyle's book, Arc of Justice, about the Ocean Sweet case.
Just won the National Book Award.
Oh, amazing book. And then a little stodgier but still filled with information, Thomas Grew's Urban Crisis about Detroit. And how close was Detroit when you were growing up in the late 40s and the 50s mm-hmm. to what your mother was fleeing? How did you feel as a young black child and then a teen and into adulthood?
Well, you know, that the South was, of course, quite removed. I came out, we were in Black Bottom. And from Black Bottom, we moved to the North End, and from the North End, we moved out to 8 Mile Road. Matter of fact, when we moved out to 8 Mile Road, there was a wall that went right down our backyard, and that was a wall of separation of the races.
Were you living in Royal Oak Township?
No, it was on the other side of 8 Mile Road.
Okay. Oh, on the south?
Yeah, I was on the other side, you know. I was on what you call the Detroit side.
Okay.
That was the Ferndale side.
Right.
So I was living right on Pinehurst. And in Mendota, there was a wall that ran down the back of the houses on Mendota, Peter. I think that wall is still there.
Huh.
It's about 6 feet high.
Wow.
And about 3.5 to 4 feet thick. And we used to walk that wall. We never understood why that wall was there until some people began to explain to us that that wall was built to separate the communities.
Well, what you know, I was just talking to a couple of gay men who live on my street, and they mm-hmm. were so angry about this vote in Michigan that essentially said that they were less than human beings,
mm-hmm.
and over this this so-called defense of marriage amendment that went in. So you all of a sudden, as a kid, got the information that you weren't a full human being, or you were not. I mean, what does that do to a consciousness?
I know what happened is that I mean it's kind of a slow accumulation. Of the actual discrimination and the racism that you encounter that comes in increments and there's a slight what you call the slights that you receive and sometimes you don't even understand why are they saying that because I went to guest school I went to presentation I went to Mumford all of I was like the only black at guest school I was the first. To go over there on Finkel and Myers. I was the first black student to go to that school, among the first. It was like three or four of us. The Binion family came and at last rescued me and gave me some kind of connection.
The Binion, I know him, and I can't think of his first name.
Okay, you got Tom Binion?
Tom, yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, yeah. The Binions moved in from Mississippi on Monta Vista and Manor.
Huh.
And that kind of like, it was like 14 to 21 of them got out of a truck, Peter. And that was like, wow, it was like, a whole neighborhood moved in at one time. And that was relief for us because we were alone out there. So Mary and Russell, who are the older Binions, they went to school with me. And we were like the only blacks at these schools. And we heard all these names hurled at us. I mean, it got me interested in languages because I didn't know what they were calling me and what was going on here. But I heard all these different kind of insinuations and very derogatory remarks, these insults, and it just attuned me, and my antenna went up, and it stayed up for a long time, and very sensitive to any kind of racial slights. And after a while, it's a certain kind of a callous forms, and you have to become really hard and tough. Otherwise, you just be torn apart. You can't stand up against these constant insults. Somebody, dehumanizing you at every turn. So after a while, I just got really tough. I became a student of my history and culture. And eventually that added up to me doing the research and doing the writing and everything. And I remember those years, when I was considered like, a little black Sambo in the classroom. And when every time they talk about slavery, everybody in the classroom would turn around and look at me.
Well, I don't know if We Shall Overcome is Herb Boyd's revenge or what. It's certainly a contribution to our understanding of a good portion of American history. Can you extrapolate and expand your individual experience from the people that you chronicle in We Shall Overcome? I should say, by the way, too, it's a source book. It's accompanied by two CDs narrated by the actors Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee as well. The story of the civil rights movement has been told a lot, but I think a lot of people see it kind of like, particularly as we recede advance into history, it's like half a century ago, and it's almost to people today, it's almost like reading about George Washington.
Ancient history.
We won the revolution, and then we also had this horrible situation with segregation and discrimination, and then now we've overcome it and all of that. But you described yourself. You think that was a generalized experience for the icons of the movement, the Martin Luther Kings and the Rosa Parks?
Probably even more so for them because when I was a young man with the opportunity to go down there, I had no I say look here, there ain't no way in the world I'm going down there. First of all, I didn't believe in that particular philosophy.
Of nonviolence.
The passive non-resistance and all that. I mean, the passive resistance and nonviolence and what have you. And I mean, those sit-ins and Freedom Rides and everything where they were just trained not to respond to any attacks on them. I was just unheard of because I was pretty much in the camp with Malcolm X, who believed in by any means necessary.
Well, you knew Malcolm X. Also.
Indeed, I did. As a teenager, I spent many time going to the mosque. I was a member of the Nation of Islam.
Really?
Oh yes. And when Malcolm left in 1963-64, I also left. And I was through with that. And I was going to hook up with Malcolm if I came out of the service, but he was assassinated about 1 week before I was scheduled to go to New York and join him.
In your book, Herb Boyd, We Shall Overcome, you tell the story of Malcolm X. going down to Selma, where maybe you could relate that. I think that's an extraordinary story.
Well, that was one of the. It was only an attempt to hook up with Dr. King. Of course, it didn't happen because you know Dr. King was in jail at that time. But they did meet again in Washington, D.C., and that was the only meeting that they ever had. So that was Malcolm beginning to show some kind of concern about what was happening to the young people going down there. And when he went down there, he met with Coretta King, and they discussed, and he let her know, and Coretta talks about it in her autobiography, how warm and sympathetic he was, and she just found him completely different from the public image that had been promoted about him. And so from there, and later on, when Fannie Lou Hamer, in 1964, when Fannie Lou Hamer came to New York City, again, Malcolm was with her on a panel, and they communicated very well, and it began to show a different kind of outlook that Malcolm had about the civil rights movement. Of course, before then, he considered like the 1963, the March on Washington. He called it the farce on Washington.
This was after he had left Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam and had went to Mecca and had a more generalized.
Just before that, because we are talking about 1963.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but then gradually he's. I think his whole different going to Mecca was a part of his forming a different kind of perspective, certainly about the nature and the role of a Muslim and Islam, you know, from a fundamental standpoint as opposed or orthodox standpoint, as opposed to being a member of the Nation of Islam. But then again, I think that King and Malcolm. If you look, if their lives could have been lived out a bit longer, I think politically and ideologically, they were on a trajectory of convergence. I think they were coming together.
Well, I was going to actually ask that. The publicists always send out these questions, I guess for talk show hosts, they think. Can't think of any themselves. And here's one I wouldn't ask, but I would change it a little. It says, this February marks the 40th anniversary of Malcolm X's assassination. If he were here today, what would he say in retrospect about the movement? But here's what I would put to you, Herb Boyd. I would turn that question to you. You said at the time, I mean, Malcolm X said at one time that he would be nonviolent when he meets up with nonviolence.
Exactly.
So here we had mostly this, as you, a passive resistance and sit-ins and what have you. How do you assess what occurred and your own feelings at the time as compared to now? Are you any softer towards what occurred then?
Oh, and no doubt about it. In doing this here book, in doing We Shall Overcome, I was completely convinced that these people. These young people in particular, and I think our young audience today need to pay attention to this, is that they made the ultimate sacrifice and commitment to go down there. When you talk about Ashwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, you know, the three men who were killed, you know, by these Kluxers or Knight Riders or, you know, these racist reactionaries.
Actually, they were the sheriff.
Exactly.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
So-called, you know, defenders. It's like Mississippi Burning the film did, Peter,
yeah.
You know, to make the FBI look like heroes, and that's absolutely ridiculous. So you have like the Stokely Carmichaels, the Rap Browns, the Robert Moses, you know, the Diane Nash, the John Lewis's, all these young people, and they were teenagers. They were like, you know, fresh out of high school, some of them, just their first or second year in college. Nonetheless, they were so concerned about voter registration. They were so concerned about ending, you know, the kind of American apartheid that they went down there, and some of them paid the ultimate price. When you talk about Viola Liuzzo, she was at Wayne State University. She was the only white woman who was killed during the civil rights movement. She had five children. Mm-hmm. She left her family. She left her education. She left her job. She went down there, and she was killed as a result of, like, ferreting. She was, like, ferrying, you know, black people from Selma after they had made the march from Selma to Montgomery and going down the highway when a car pulled up along her with FBI agent in it, an undercover agent, you know, Gary Rowe, and they fired on her and killed her. So, I mean, they have a film. Her daughter has made or was a part of a documentary called Home of the Brave that talks about her commitment, the dedication that she gave to the movement. So it's those kind of people, you know, and after doing the research, almost each stratum introduced me to another gem, another precious life, you know, that was involved in the struggle. And that just turned me around. You know, before, you know, I used to talk about the civil rights movement, but, you know, being a Malcolmite and everything, you know, my concern was more with, you know, hey, you hit me, I'll send you to the cemetery.
Yeah, it's extraordinary when you think, too, the amount of deaths that occurred in the 1960s. I mean, actually, the 1930s, 300 working people were killed by sheriffs and cops and National Guardsmen and just trying to unionize. And,
oh, sure.
And the amount of violence that we saw in the 1960s was certainly horrendous. We only have a little bit of time left, and as I we're interviewing Herb Boyd and his about his extraordinary new book for Source Books, We Shall Overcome. It has two CDs with it about a lot of the source material.
It's kind of like a veritable soundtrack of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far I've been asking an easy question. I kind of knew enough to ask the questions, and here's a really a tough one. Why do we still have race as a problem today? We had the civil rights movement. We got rid of all these Kluxers. We don't have these racists supposedly sitting in the Senate trying to block legislation. We don't have governors sitting standing in the way of university doors. Mm-hmm. Why are we still talking about race today?
Because it's still highly prevalent, and racism is highly prevalent. Sometimes it's a bit more subtle and nuanced today, but it manifests itself in so many different ways. Look at the recent election, Peter, you know, in which, you know, various ways, you know, you used to talk about disenfranchisement in as much as a poll tax or literacy test or a grandfather clause, but now you find other kind of ways to deny people an opportunity to exercise their franchise. You know, so it's very subtle, it's very nuanced. I mean, police brutality is alive and well in America. The whole disparity in terms of pay, the opportunities, you know. I mean, we still need, you know, affirmative action as far as I'm concerned out there, although some may deny that. Remember, the title of this book is say, We Shall Overcome.
Mm-hmm.
We have not overcome yet. You know, we still have a large amount of things to do in terms of bringing equality and full freedom into society for our minorities in particular.
Now, the conservatives say that leading the forces of tolerance and what have you are they, the Republicans. They've appointed Condoleezza Rice as Secretary of State, replacing another African-American. And
that's kind of cynical manipulation of race right there as far as I'm concerned.
Is it, you know, if race... is race ultimately cultural? I mean, in other words, we know of musicians that they say that are white but have lived black, and they were always related to as they were African Americans. And I mean, if in many ways you could say about Condoleezza Rice, couldn't you, that they virtually have adopted and people are free to do what they want. I'm not critical of them
but
essentially adopted a Euro-American culture.
That's right. They adopt, they fall, they conform, they're co-opted and what have you. Many of them are paid off quite handsomely for doing that, and they have every reason. It may be their deep desires, and I wouldn't want to at all disparage that. People can go and determine which way they want to go. That's their own decision. But, you know, you have people out there who are very much, you know, hey, I got a price, and you can get me for that. And they really believe that, you know, being a part of the kind of Christian conservative movement out there, you can strike a particular moral value issue that will resonate very well with them. You know, I mean, I think what happened with this year's past election is a clear indication that, you know, hey, race is very much apparent, and they play a race card all the time. You know, I mean, Rove was a supreme strategist. You know, when you go to the exurbs of this here country, you begin to talk about the empire of Christianity. For me, you know, the interpretation of, you know, you generation of vipers, you know, that the whole question, the Pharisees are in the White House at last.
Mm.
The Pharisees are in the White House. And these people, the whole evil axis out there, and then you have like a Massachusetts Supreme Court that came down with this, you know, the same-sex marriage thing, you know, like, boom. So 11 states can chime in on that. you know, these Democratic Party workers and leaders and activists and stuff going into the black pulpit, but not going into the white pulpits. They better take their blackberries and go to Mayberry. That's what's happening.
Boy, as always, a pleasure to have you on the show. The book is We Shall Overcome, filled with this incredible history of the struggle for human rights. Just the photographs alone are almost worth it. The narrative makes it whole by Herb Boyd. And then two CDs narrated by actors Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee. And I'm hoping, Herb, that we're going to have you back real soon to talk about your forthcoming book, Sugar in Harlem, the biography of the boxer Sugar Ray Robinson.
That would be my pleasure. And of course, when we have our event in Detroit, maybe I can appear again on Riff and talk to you about that particular event.
I'm there.
Okay, thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
WRIF.com. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Are you tired of hearing mortgage companies advertising absurdly low rates? Or how about all those programs that are exclusive only to them? Well, the truth is, all these companies work with the same rates and the same programs. They are not exclusive to any one mortgage lender. It's nerve-wracking enough trying to buy a new home or figuring out how you're going to get all your debt paid off. The last thing you need is more stress from a mortgage company throwing unrealistic programs and rates at you. If you're looking for someone who will give you honest answers about your individual situation, whether it's buying a new home, refinancing, or consolidating your debt, then you absolutely need to call Mike Jenkins at First Horizon Home Loans at 877-505-8600, extension 222. You'll receive a free mortgage analysis, and you'll be able to decide for yourself which program is best for you. So call Mike Jenkins with First Horizon Home Loans today and find out how you can get home with less stress. That's 877-505-8600, extension 222. Loan subject to approval. First Horizon Home Loans is an equal housing lender.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed. From Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with Brenda Warner, whose husband Kurt is having a great season thus far with the Giants.
I told the Giants when they got Kurt that they were really signing both of us. It was like when Bill and Hillary were co-presidents. We're like co-quarterbacks. And it works.
So how'd you get Kurt to find himself?
You know, I yelled at him until I was blue in the face, but I didn't really have a breakthrough until I sat him down and broke down film, went over coverages.
Well, okay, who do you play this weekend?
We're at Lambeau, and just to give you an idea about how well we're playing right now,
yeah.
We just happen to have the highest over number in the league this week. Bet the house on the over. And just between you, me, and the pit boss, take the Giants and the points. I think we're a strong road team on grass.
Thanks for the tip, Brenda. Those over make me nervous, so I gotta tell you.
Honey, dip it then. I dip that puppy all day. If you're over down to 38, you'll be doing victory shots at Crown Royal sometime late in the third quarter, and then you can switch to Shivas down the home stretch.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program on the Riff. Riff.
American people have a right to know.
When you need it high, you need
The Riff's Midnight Metal.
See two Thursday nights on The Riff.
Join Screaming Scott Randall for the loudest hour on your radio.
That's what this is all about.
Midnight Metal.
Midnight Metal on The Riff. Call in your heavier-than-hell request at 313-298-WRIF. You can also fax in or email for requests and your chance to win Killer Riff swag.
Send your faxes to 248-398-6219 or email screaming at WRIF.com.
Get your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you, as usual. I was just trying to do some arithmetic, and I realized that tomorrow, or even today, depending on when you're listening to this broadcast, is the 41st anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And that pretty much means that if you were born in 1950 or before, you probably had a distinct memory of where you were when this all occurred. If not, it's probably history to you. And it's an important piece of American history. And I've come across another book, actually twice in this week. It's from Sourcebook. It's called President Kennedy Has Been Shot. And it includes, like our other guest, Herb Boyd, We Shall Overcome, some CD work as well. This one narrated by Dan Rather, and it chronicles the events as they happened with actual live broadcasts. You get to hear recordings from the Dallas Police, the White House, and ones aboard Air Force One in those tragic 4 days. Joining me is the co-author of President Kennedy Has Been Shot, Susan Bennett. She's the director of international exhibits at Newseum. We'll talk about that in a minute. She's a veteran editor and reporter who covered foreign affairs, national politics, and Congress in Washington. And she was previously an editor and writer on USA Today's editorial page and a national correspondent for Knight Ridder newspapers and a bureau chief and state editor for UPI. Welcome, Susan Bennett. If I tell any more of your background, we won't have any time to interview you.
Well, and they'll think I'm absolutely ancient, so thank you so much, though. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for joining us. Tell us about the Newseum. That's an interesting concept in and of itself, besides your incredible book, President Kennedy Has Been Shot.
Well, the Newseum is a museum of news. It operated for 5 years in Arlington, Virginia, just across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C., and it was such a hit that we decided to build a bigger and better facility, and that's going to open in Washington, D.C. in 2007, right on Pennsylvania Avenue.
And who is behind all of this effort?
We're funded by the Freedom Forum, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan foundation dedicated to looking into media issues.
And what would we find if we went to your facility today? What kind of exhibits are there?
Well, we're closed as of right now, but when you come in 2007, it's a marvelous explanation of how the news operates. One of our missions is to take people behind the story of news and to tell them why and how journalists do their job. We talk about the First Amendment and the privileges and responsibilities of that, and we give them a brief history of how the media has evolved over the last couple of centuries in this country. We've got the largest display of the Berlin Wall outside of Germany. We have something called the Journalist Memorial, which honors journalists who have died while reporting the news, and we've got more than 1,500 names on that memorial.
Yeah, and it's still occurring around the world today, and in these hot spots like Iraq, more journalists are falling afoul of the events they're covering.
Iraq has certainly become the most dangerous conflict for journalists in our lifetime.
You know, I asked Herb Boyd, who wrote the other source book, We Shall Overcome, that an event or a series of events in his case, the civil rights movement, has been told so many times. Tell us what differentiates this book, President Kennedy Has Been Shot, from so many of the others that have appeared since in the last 4 decades.
Well, Kathy Trost, the co-author, and I both had read a number of books, but nowhere could we find a compilation of stories about the journalists who covered the events. I mean, this was one of the defining moments in journalism in the United States, particularly for television. And some of the more well-known journalists, such as Dan Rather and Bob Schieffer, who happened to be in Dallas that day, have told their personal stories. But we didn't hear a lot of the stories from the broadcasters, the radio and TV reporters, and the photographers who were there and who covered the funeral in Washington of John F. Kennedy. And it's just a marvelous collection, I think. It's basically the 4 days as they occurred, told through the words of the journalists who were writing the first rough draft of history of this event.
And it has that quality of almost TV radio scripted quality to it, mixed in with some incredible photographs and also the CD narrated by Dan Rather.
Well, we were really writing for two audiences. We had the audience, those of us who remember the event, and we wanted to tell that story from a different perspective of anything that they've read or seen before. But then the bigger audience, as you pointed out, are the people who have no memory whatsoever of the Kennedy assassination. And we wanted to sort of bring to life this historic event because, you know, in so many history books you read the line, this was the last presidential assassination, but that doesn't really convey the drama that took place and the uncertainty and really terror that permeated the nation for the days that followed the assassination.
Susan Bennett, you said when I was reading off all of your credits in journalism, made you sound ancient, but I have to ask you, so this will give away more. Do you remember where you were when you heard the news that President Kennedy had been shot?
Distinctly. I was in high school in Memphis, Tennessee, and I was going to a Catholic girls' school. They called us all into the auditorium where we had our assemblies and told us this. We were shocked, as it was everyone, and they dismissed us for the day.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. I found an old Detroit news, the daily paper here in Detroit, one of them, and the headline is Kill Kennedy. I mean, it sounds what it means, of course, Kennedy killed, but in order to fit the headline in, it's extraordinarily almost shocking. I mean, it almost sounds like an imploration, you know, to do it. But this, of course, was a story probably, would you say, on the magnitude of September 11th? Is there a corollary in the way that the media covered it?
We certainly saw that. It was the equivalent of 9/11 in our lifetime. You didn't have the loss of life, but I think the shock value for that time was certainly similar because you had so many factors at play here. You had this young, charismatic, articulate president and his beautiful wife, and they had become the closest thing basically to a Hollywood version of the first couple that you can imagine. And you know, it was not Camelot, as has been told by some. There were a lot of detractors. There were a lot of people who didn't like Kennedy. The day he arrived in Texas, there was an ad in the Dallas Morning newspaper that was really a hate ad saying, you know, we don't like you, we don't like what you do. So there was a lot of animosity toward him, but yet mm-hmm. even those who didn't like him were fascinated by his charm.
Yeah, that was the famous "Welcome to Dallas, Mr. Kennedy," right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and certainly that the election was a squeaker, much like the 2000 election with charges of vote fraud and what have you. And this was also the first Catholic president that had ever been elected in the United States. So there was a lot of controversy. As I began to read through it, I just got it yesterday, so I haven't been able to read it through, but I just happened upon a section with a description of the results of President Kennedy's anatomy as he got hit. And one tends to park that aside, but it was pretty grisly and gruesome wounds, weren't they?
It was amazing. And you know, the other amazing thing is that the journalists got so close to him. I mean, they were in the motorcade about five cars back in the press pool car. There were four reporters and the press bus was behind, but they rushed to Parkland Hospital right behind the presidential limousine, and these reporters who were in the White House pool stood literally 1 or 2 feet from the limo and saw Mrs. Kennedy cradling the bleeding head of her husband in her lap. Hmm. They saw the blood on her dress. They saw the yellow roses, which had been bloodied. And, you know, they really got up close and personal. It was a shocking thing for them to see. They talked about the emotions of that moment. And but the other thing that came through to us was, I think we've forgotten, you know, it was the assassination of the president is a huge story, but there were so many other stories that followed it and that compounded it, because you had the hunt for the killer. You had people running through the streets of Dallas looking for Lee Harvey Oswald. You had the killing of a Dallas policeman by Oswald, then Oswald's capture and his imprisonment. And then, of course, 2 days later, you had Jack Ruby shooting on live television Lee Harvey Oswald, followed by the two funerals on Monday of Kennedy in Washington, which we are familiar with through the images and television, but also Lee Harvey Oswald, who was quietly buried in the Texas cemetery.
Now, those are the 4 days.
What
you speak of, which is the subtitle of President Kennedy Has Been Shot. Experience the moment-to-moment account of the 4 days that changed America. It's published by Sourcebooks, and my guest is Susan Bennett, who is the co-author with Kathy Trost from the Newseum. this, of course, this openness about the travel by an American president will never occur again after that. And certainly now, in preparation for the January 20th inauguration of President Bush, they're bringing in even a full military battalion of Marines. So this ability to get close up, that's gone. That's history, isn't it?
Well, when you look at the video of that motorcade in Dallas, it is amazing. I mean, literally, people were almost reaching out and touching the limousine. When Kennedy and Jacqueline Kennedy landed at the field, you know, he was instantly went beyond the Secret Service men and was out in the crowd shaking hands. The reporters got so close. My husband just happened to be a reporter at the time, John Bennett. He was working for a paper in San Antonio, and the night before when he had been in Fort Worth, or the day before, he was at an event and just stepped out to have a cigarette, as journalists did in those days, and out walk the president and Mrs. Kennedy, and they stood and talked to him for 15 minutes. I mean, that would never happen today.
No, certainly not. And also, people that have been to the scene of the assassination, Dealey Plaza, have told me that they expected some enormous, you know, huge downtown plaza, but it's a relatively small area, and that what... If we accept the Warren Commission events, as they chronicled them, that the shooter, Lee Harvey Oswald, was, as they said, wasn't even very far away from the president.
That was the amazing thing to me. We did go to Kathy and I both went to the Sixth Floor Museum in Dallas, which is the old Texas School Book Depository. And I think if you stand up on that floor, on the sixth floor, and look down, you're amazed at the clear shot somebody would have and how very close it is. As you say, Dealey Plaza is not big. It's a very small area, really, and there's no impediment between the building and that area where the motorcade came through.
You know, this is usually a question that people ask at the end of interviews, but is there a lesson here? I mean, I was thinking, and I didn't really see one. I mean, it was an awful event, and we should be aware of the awful events in our history as well as the good ones, but I don't know. Does anything pop to your head?
Well, I think the journalists came away with some appreciations. I mean, I was very impressed with how professional they were. It was absolute chaos, and I was really taken by the care that they tried to take in reporting the news accurately. You know, there were mistakes made. I mean, there was such panic at the time. There were reports that Vice President Lyndon Johnson had been hit. And indeed, he had not. There were reports that, you know, other things were going on with the government. There was a plane load of cabinet officials who actually were on their way to a trade mission in Japan. They were very concerned because some people thought this was an attack, not just on President Kennedy, but on the U.S. government. But by and large, they were very careful in what they reported. I mean, a number of them had heard from Catholic priests who had visited the dying president that he indeed had died, and they decided not to report that yet because it had not been officially announced that the president was dead.
Now, yourself doing the work on this, along with Kathy Trost, did you find things that you were surprised that because most of this information is public? I mean, this is, like I said, a different presentation, and also stuff that that hasn't been heard before, particularly in your book. But were there things that you found that you weren't aware of previously?
We found an amazing number of things. One of the photographers who was on the White House bus in the motorcade talked about seeing a rifle being withdrawn from the sixth floor window of the Texas School Book Depository just as the shots were fired. A couple of reporters who were down in Dealey Plaza took some notes, did some interviews, ran toward the School Book Depository because that was the nearest building. They wanted to use a payphone. They asked somebody, "Where's the payphone?" A guy said, "Oh, it's in there." That guy was Lee Harvey Oswald. I'd never heard these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you don't treat the question, or do you, in President Kennedy has been shot about the accuracy of the Warren Commission conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin?
Well, we wanted to publish the book in time for the 40th anniversary, in large part because a lot of these journalists are dying or aging. And we decided we can go two ways. We can either get the book published in time or we can track the conspiracy theories. And because so many books have been written, documentaries have been produced, we decided we weren't going to do that. This is going to be the story of the journalists. told through their words.
Wait a minute, but was it? It wasn't published in time for the 40th anniversary.
This is the paperback version. The hardback cover.
Hardback version
came out last year, and this is the updated paperback version.
Well, they were kind enough to send me the elegant hardcover.
You are on the A-list then.
Susan Bennett is my guest, and she's the co-author of President Kennedy Has Been Shot. Is there any sense? See, I got kind of raised up on all this. What has been derogatorily called conspiracy theory, that there was a plot of some degree, but of course this, as you said, it is a labyrinth, and when you start getting into the ragged end of it, hundreds of people have been killed to shush up the real events, and I mean it gets fairly preposterous. But do you make mention at all that there is controversy about that?
Well, some of the reporters in recounting their tales talk about this. I mean, for some of these reporters, this became their life. Since they were literally eyewitnesses to history, they've been interviewed dozens of times by other journalists, by Hollywood producers, because they happened to be there. I don't know that this mystery will ever be resolved, because there were so many twists and turns to it. And even though you've had enormous amount of time dedicated to this, both by government investigators, by private investigators, by authors, no one has come up with a definitive answer that satisfies everyone to a lot of the questions that surround this murder.
I actually think that it's interesting that there is such suspicion about official explanations. I mean, sometimes official explanations can, in fact, be true, right?
That's right.
I think you're right, though. I don't know that it'll ever be resolved.
I think the panic of the moment caused some things to be done that added to the confusion. You know, Lyndon Johnson's decision to be sworn in on Air Force One as it was leaving, or just before it left Dallas with the body of the president. You know, people questioned why did he do it this quickly, and the reality seemed to be certainly that there was so much concern about what was going to become of the government, because they didn't know if this was an isolated attack or not. Things such as that just added to the aura of mystery.
You know what? I keep saying we're going to move away from this. And one more thing. Okay. And I saw a film one time. I think it may have been in Mark Lane's movie, Rush to Judgment. And I think he's gone really in a direction that puts him a little off the board. But he was my mother and father's state assemblyman in New York City when they lived there. So I kind of have this odd connection to him. But in this film, they show Oswald, and you may have seen it, Oswald's being dragged through the Dallas police headquarters, and, you know, he, in being arrested, he resisted, he was kind of knocked around in order to be brought in, and someone shoves a microphone in front of his face and says to him, "Why did you kill President Kennedy?" And all of a sudden, he just looks shocked, and he says, "Oh, so I'm the patsy." And then you ever see that?
That's actual video.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another amazing thing that I've found, that the reporters had such unbelievable access to a man who was accused of killing the President of the United States. I mean, they had to show no ID to get in. I mean, Ike Pappas was a radio reporter for a local New York radio station. He flew down as soon as he heard the word, and he said he just, you know, he literally walked right in the door. And, you know, you could walk around, you could interview people several times from that Friday afternoon when he was captured until the Sunday morning when the murder took place. Lee Harvey Oswald was walked through the hallways, and people were always sticking mics in front of him. You know, and they actually tried to have sort of a press conference with him. I mean, you try to picture that happening today,
sure,
and it's just inconceivable.
Well, Susan Bennett, tell us, in your book, President Kennedy Has Been Shot, there's the CD. And is the audio CD with the paper edition as well?
It is.
Okay.
And, you know, as you said, this is not the book on tape. It's rarely heard audio that we got from the National Archives and from presidential libraries that sort of tells the story from an audio viewpoint. And Dan Rather's the narrator of it.
How'd you get Rather to do it? That's pretty prestigious.
Well, he's been very good to us at the museum. We have good relationships with a number of national broadcasters, and he previously had done another book for Source Books on World War II.
And remind us what his connection, if any, was with November 27th.
Well, he had a very direct connection. He, at the time, was working for CBS, but he was the New Orleans bureau chief, and he had been a Texas broadcaster. That's where he earned his spurs, so to speak. And so he came over. They asked him to sort of coordinate the coverage of the Kennedy visit to Texas because it was a very controversial visit. He came there to mend fences within the Democratic Party. There was a lot of dissension within the party ranks, and he really needed to win Texas the next time he ran. So Dan was there on the ground, and he was going to be a part of the coverage. He wasn't in the motorcade, but he was one of the first to report the final word on Kennedy's death. Eddie Barker, who was a local TV reporter, was actually credited with being the very first because he was at the location where Kennedy was due to give a speech at noon. And Eddie was on air when a doctor he knew quite well came up to him and sort of whispered to him that he had spoken with the hospital and they said that the president was dead. And that's where CBS made its first report. Walter Cronkite, who also had Texas connections, he was the anchor in New York, and he knew Eddie, and he knew that he was a reliable, very reliable reporter. And they reported it as such, that Eddie Barker had been told by a reliable source that the president could be dead. Dan Rather had also, on his own, called the hospital, spoken with a doctor who confirmed this. So they were very ahead on the story.
Well, and there's lots of very, very interesting stuff on the CD. And tell us some of the material that's on there. And you mentioned Walter Cronkite. Tell us how he presented the news.
Well, you know, it was amazing because they didn't have the ability to go live. I think we forget how things used to be in the old days, and they weren't the good old days necessarily, because we didn't have 24-hour news, we didn't have cable stations, and all of the broadcasters had clunky machinery to deal with. The UPI bulletin came over the wire saying shots have been fired at the presidential motorcade. Walter Cronkite was an old UPI guy, and he ran over and he wanted to go live on the network, but he couldn't do that. I mean, all they could do was an audio of his saying that an attack had been made on the president. They couldn't do that because they didn't have a camera in the CBS newsroom. They only brought it in time for the nightly newscast, so they had to go down two or three flights of steps, lug this gigantic camera up, and then they had to wait 20 minutes for it to warm up. And Walter said after that happened, they still were competitive with the other networks, but he said from that day on, CBS always had a camera in the newsroom, and it was always turned on.
You also were able to include a number of rare phone calls, like from Johnson to the Kennedy family members. What did we hear on that?
I had no idea these existed. Johnson, as I said, made the decision to be sworn in as the plane was still at Love Field in Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy was there. She chose to fly back on the plane with the body of her husband. And while he was on the plane, he made some phone calls. He called Rose Kennedy, for example, to express his condolences to her. Throughout the course of those 4 days, Johnson was the master politician. He literally was reaching out to everybody, and there were conversations with J. Edgar Hoover and with labor leaders, with religious leaders, because I think he realized he very quickly had to put together a coalition. There had to be a unified front because the confusion that was apparent in the first 24 hours, could have led to panic and lack of faith in the government. He needed the help of a lot of different quarters to bring it together.
And they also have the audio on this of Lee Harvey Oswald's shooting by Jack Ruby.
Yes, there were reporters standing literally right there. Ike Pappas was one of them. And they had gathered around the vehicle that Lee Harvey Oswald was going to be brought to. This was one of the worst-kept secrets in the history of journalism. The sheriff there said, I'm not going to tell you when I'm transferring him, because he had to be moved from one local jail to another. He said, he was telling all the reporters this on a Saturday night. He said, but if you're here by 10 o'clock Sunday morning, you'll be okay. So, unfortunately, not only did the reporters know it, but so did Jack Ruby, who was sort of a groupie. He was a nightclub owner. He hung out a lot with the police and with journalists. On Friday night, as a matter of fact, Ike Pappas ran into him in the police station, and he thought he was a homicide detective. But Ruby was there because he was handing out cards to the out-of-town reporters, inviting them to come to his after-hours club and have free drinks.
Well, Susan Bennett, we're almost out of time, and this all ends in tears, and some dramatic moments in American history. And I guess I would say thank you and your co-author, Kathy Tross, and the museum for putting this all together. It's an incredible piece of history, and it's certainly, well, we should say, though, what there's which I didn't realize, is an updated version somewhat from the hardback cover that I have.
There is. It's just out. It's available at Amazon.com or www.newseum.org.
Susan Bennett, thank you so much for having joined me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you so much for your time, Peter.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werbe. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Please allow me to adjust my pants. Should I have a dance, the good time dance. Put the onlookers and innocent bystanders into a
Listen up, you stinking maggots. Neil Fallon from Clutch here. Join Clutch at the State Theater, downtown Detroit, Friday, November 26th.
Clutch with special guests Fu Manchu and High on Fire.
It's on fire.
Friday, November 26th at the State Theater. Tickets on sale now at all Ticketmaster outlets.
Wake up. This is Neil Fallon from Clutch. I will see you Friday, November 26th when Clutch plays the State Theater.
So, what's it going to be? Thanksgiving leftovers with the family or Clutch at the State Theater? Clutch with Fu Manchu and High on Fire, November 26th. All ages welcome. Buy your tickets at cc.com, Ticketmaster.com, all Ticketmaster outlets, record time and for Dale or charge by phone at 248-645-6666. Clutch, Friday, November 26th, State Theater, downtown Detroit.
Hi, this is Jim Rill, your friendly dealer. At Jim Rill's Friendly Honda, we have some great deals this month. We have a final sale on all remaining 2004 Honda Element four-wheel drive starting at $17,293. That's right, $17,293. Folks, this is it. At Jim Rill's Friendly Honda, come in and lease a 2005 Civic four-door value package automatic for as low as $177 a month. We have the largest selection of Hondas of anywhere on the east side. So if you're looking for a Honda and looking for a year-end deal, come and see Jim Rill at Friendly Honda.
See dealer for details.
Integrity, honesty, lending a hand to the community. And there's nothing more friendly than a great deal from Jim Rill.
Come over to Jim Rill's Friendly Honda. And we're on the corner of Romeo Plank and M59, right in Clinton Township. Get all the details in our newspaper ads.
All right, lady, what's the hurry?
Oh, hello, Johnny. How's my favorite son?
Oh, hi. I'm fine, Mom. Now, about your speed.
Well, my heater's broken, and I just wanted to get home to warm up. You know how this weather affects my arthritis.
That's no excuse, Mom. Here, try these.
Heat treat warmers. Oh, thank you. You're such a good boy.
Yep, that's what I use on cold days like this.
Are you still coming over for dinner tonight?
Love to, Mom, but wait right here a minute.
What are you doing?
I still need to write you a ticket.
Sometimes life can be cold, but you can get warmer with Heat Treat Warmers, the line of air-activated warmers for your hands, body, and feet. Heat Treat Warmers are all natural and so easy to use. They run on air. Use them in any cold weather situation, at work or play, or share them with your family. Slide a pair of hand warmers into your gloves or pockets. The foot warmers go right into your shoes like an insole, and the adhesive body warmers can be worn under your clothing like a mini heating pad. Visit warmers.com for more information. Get warmer with Heat Treat Warmers. Available at Dunham's, Dick's Sporting Goods, Meijer, Cabela's, and Target.
More Riff Rock with Tiny Tim. Next.
Why are men all over America talking about Testosterpro? Listen.
After I tried Testosterpro, I felt like I was the man I wanted to be. I wish I'd found out about it sooner because I feel like I'm more of a man now than when I was younger.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. In many men, testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now there's Testosterpro, the complete performance boosting system I designed for men who are starting to feel their age. If you don't feel like the man you used to be, call now for a 30-day risk-free trial of the Testosterpro system, which includes my bonus report on aging and its effects on energy, sex drive, and stamina, free with your order.
Call now for your confidential trial of Testosterpro. 1-800-897-3124. 1-800-897-3124. Results will vary. 1-800-897-3124. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-897-3124.
Drew and Mike in the morning.
They're great.
Daddy taking you home. The one and only. 101.
Well, that's W.
R-I-F. Detroit. Riff Rocks.
Baby!
First up is a tune by a group called Blues Image. I love that name. I've sworn I will name my firstborn, be he a man or a woman, Blues Image. Blues Image Burgundy. Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? And this song in particular is about the crazy journey we all take through this big blue marble we call Earth. Ah, I dropped the steak in the bathwater.